are you there?
Okay, thank you so much.
Good morning, Chair.
How are you, Brian? Thanks.
Is it visible, Chair?
Yes, it is visible. All right. Brian, you have advised me that the minister has conveyed her apologies. Is that true?
That is correct, Chair. She has indicated that she will be joining the meeting later. She's attending a cabinet committee meeting that started 8:30. So mm-hmm. She will be joining us later, as well as the deputy minister.
Well, the deputy minister will also be joining us later.
That is correct. They are in the same meeting.
In the same meeting. No, thank you very much, Brian. So, can we note the apologies from the on the side of the committee members?
We have an apology from General Wolomisa. We have an apology from Ngosi Tebekulu. We also have an apology from Mr. Shelembe. Mr. Shelembe will be joining the meeting later. Those are all the apologies.
Those are all the apologies. So, colleagues, we note those apologies. Is there any objection? No objection. The agenda, colleagues, is as it is which was adopted previously. Three items in the main. It's a briefing by DOD on its annual performance plan and budget, and their responses to the AG of South Africa report on the status of records review. And secondly, is the briefing by AMSCO on its plan and budget 22-23 and their responses to the AG of South Africa a report on the status of records review, and we consider the minutes and we close the meeting. So those are the issues in the main, colleagues. can we, without much ado, let me welcome all of you, colleagues, to the meeting. It's your meeting. And on your behalf, I welcome the SECDEF and the team. She will introduce the team, especially those who will be doing a presentation today. I also welcome the board of AMSCO and the CEO and the team that supports the CEO. The CEO will do the honors at the right time. I don't know who is here representing the board, but the CEO will indicate when, maybe I will ask him to do immediately after I've made these comments. I also welcome the team from the AG's office. I can see on the platform. On the platform, I can see Mbali Tsotetsi. I can also see Edward Kutsie. Those are the only two that I can see on the platform. So yeah, they're welcome. And so let me just say, in case I omitted other members of the AG's office, that I welcome all of you, colleagues from the AG office, to this meeting. So that's then the compliments. Of course, I welcome the support team, of the support team, our support team. All right, colleagues, without wasting time, let's quickly move to the first presentation that will be presented by the SECDEF. SECDEF, over to you.
Good morning, Chairperson, good morning, Chairperson, and the members of the Portfolio Committee. Thank you very much for welcoming us. I am here with the team accompanied by the CFO and his team, and I also have Dr. Kamete and his team, which is the area where we work on our APP. And we will start with that presentation. It will be in two parts. It is the annual performance plan, and then also accompanied by the financials. And then after that, with the second part of the presentation, Chairperson, will be the, presenting the progress made in the implementation of the status review record. And that will be done by the CFO and the team. And without much ado, Chairperson, if you would allow us, I would then ask Mr. Michael Cox, who is responsible, who will be responsible for presenting the APP. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much. Mr. Cox, how much time do you need for your presentation?
Good morning, Chair. I believe an hour should suffice for the presentation.
Can I take you to 11 o'clock? That gives you 54 minutes.
Thank you, Chair.
Okay.
All right. Thank you, Chair. Good morning, honourable members. Good morning. We're presenting the DoD APP as introduced by the Secretary for Defence. Chair, we tabled on the 16th of March as a Department of Defence. We have the introduction, Chair. I'm not going to spend time on the scope of the presentation. We'll touch on that as we go through the presentation. Slide 5, Chair, we're just confirming that this presentation was built and was aligned in terms of the MTS priority for government. It has been revised by the DPME as prescribed by government processes, and it supports the strategic plan of the Department of Defense, our 2020-25 plan. It also includes the content of the Minister's Performance Agreement with the Commander-in-Chief, and it obviously integrates all the HR interventions that we propose, or not propose, are implementing from 22 onwards. And it will outline the Minister's priority, Secretary, and the Chief of the National Defence Forces focus areas for the 22 MTF planning cycle. Chair, slide 7. I think, Chair, this is one of the most important slides of the presentation that will create context for the remaining slides. As all the honourable members are aware, we are implementing or attempting to implement Defence Review 2015 as national policy on defence, and we're aware that the review has 4 goals and it has 12 tasks. We're aware of the proposed trajectory that was included within the Defence Review, and we're also aware of the 5 packages in the plan to arrest the decline, which was endorsed and approved by government and by council as well. As we are all aware, Chair and honourable members, due to funding restraints within the Department of Defence, our ability to implement the 5 packages, even package 1 and 2, have been compromised due to ongoing reduction in defence allocation. And just to orientate members, package 1 was to ensure that organisational efficiencies in place, And these are areas where the Minister, the Chief and the Secretary for of Defence continue to spend a lot of effort to ensure organisational efficiencies. Then package two is to ensure our policies, strategies and plans are all in place. And Chair and Honourable Members, we are on track, but we do have gaps in this area. And this is where we will have a great discussion of, are we pursuing a level of ambition or strategies or outputs that are attainable within the funds that this department has. So I think, Chair, we will spend time on package two. And once we understand what we can afford and what we can do, package three becomes more relevant then. These are the support systems that we should have had in place in support of package four being our prime mission equipment. But Chair, in the context of a declining budget, package three, your support systems are not in place where we would want them to be in place with a direct impact on our prime mission equipment and obviously the defence mandate. Chair, just to take us back slightly, in terms of the defence review, we're all aware that policy option two, expand independently, was selected by cabinet. But Chair, the option two was based on a GDP allocation of 1.8% to the Department of Defence. And as we speak today, our budget currently stands at 0.76%. So we are far below 1.8% GDP. And to that extent, sir, it would make sense, and as I alluded to in package two, we have to reassess, is policy option two achievable? And we may need to revise our level of ambition and default option one, where we will need to reduce to allocation. Chair, this is a budget that was provided to the Department of Defence. I believe that the DCD is familiar with the budget allocation. Just to touch briefly that we've received $1 billion for the INYA for the exit mechanism and $800 million for the 23 planning cycle for the movement of our SANDF colleague out of the system. Questions that have been raised, and you will see, Chair, through all the programs, within the APP, there has been an increase in the item 40 allocations to all the programs in the department. And this is due to the fact that HR has taken the $1.8 billion for the exit mechanism and allocated that across all the programs within the department. So there will be an increase in all the item 40 expenditures for transfers and households across all of the departmental programs. And this was picked up and attempted or identified by the research team of the PCD. Chair, this is just a continuation of the budget. We take note of the budget. Chair, this is a distribution of how we've allocated the budget within the Department of Defence. Obviously, seeing who is the greatest, who is the smallest, and the percentage allocation. I think the most important part of this slide, Chair, is to note that the full cost requirement of the department is an estimated 75 billion rand, and our budget allocation is at 49 billion. So the shortfall, the estimated shortfall, is an estimated 20 billion, and I think we are close to the 30 billion area, and that is for noting by the PCD. Chair, what we continue to grapple with in year and for the 23 and 24 planning cycle is our COE expenditure, where we foresee our projected over expenditures approximately 3.1 billion this year and in the outer years as well. As we're aware, initiatives have been implemented by the Minister to curb our actual expenditure, but obviously the COE pressures will continue and the department will need to attend to these through internal reprioritization and to see how we can attend to these as best within the budget that we have. Chair, this is just a graph of how our actual HR strength has declined since the 2014-15 cycle, and this is where we would like to be in the 72,000 range in the outer MPF years. Chair, I think it's important we are just reflecting last year when the department under the leadership of the Minister Chief and the Secretary for Defence, when we submitted our proposals to the National Treasury, we highlighted a number of challenges which are impacting on the Department of Defence. And we foresee that in our planning cycle for 22-23, when we move into our planning process, sorry, for 23-24, the same issues will remain. And so these continue to be our non-implementation of the defence review. I've already alluded to that. Our inability to implement the national security strategy requiring 22 subunits, where we are only able to employ 15 subunits. I alluded to this earlier in the presentation, the impact on prime mission equipment, the inability to modernize and sustain the current levels of prime mission equipment across all programs. In terms of our IS&A systems, we have legacy systems that are outdated and non-integrated, and funding remains a problem for our ICT systems. But the Secretary for Defence has pronounced that one of the priorities for the 22 planning cycle outside the plan is to source funding in conjunction with CSANDF to buy an off-the-shelf IFMS system that can meet all the departmental requirements. Chair, we continue to struggle with our facilities, our structures. Training is a fundamental challenge that we have. A reduced allocation implies reduced training opportunities, which has a direct impact on your combat readiness of the SANDF and its ability to execute its missions. Then in terms of stock levels, and there we speak to, this is our support systems, and we're speaking about this, ammunition, spares and general commodities, remain at levels that are not desirous. They should be higher, but they are not. And they are also impacting on our UN reimbursements, but we'll touch on that. And then the last issue that we did speak to last year is the defense industry and the challenges that we are having within the defense industry and our possibility that we will lose our sovereignty within the defense industry. So, Chair, those were the issues we raised last year with the National Treasury, and we foresee that in absence of an increase in our budget, this will be the same picture. And, Chair, I think it's fair to note that although the department received a nominal increase of 0.6%, our real decrease was 3.7% for this financial year. And we projected that decrease will continue into the MTEF planning cycle. Chair, included within the APP is our situational analysis. So I will move very shortly and quickly through the environmental or situation analysis. In the external environment, we continue to be very mindful that we have a role to play as the Department of Defense, and more specifically the SANDF, both domestically, regionally, and on the African continent. We're highly aware of international terrorism and our requirements to deploy in the SADC, Mozambique, and the DRC. And we continue to try and drive this, the political environment through our policy agenda. And we intend to have our defense diplomacy policy finalized within this current year to inform our policy engagement. Then in terms of economy, Chair, I've already alluded to the fact that our South African economy remains flat. The impact on the defense allocation in the end, tech will either remain consistent or will be declining if that's the trend that we've seen, a declining trend. The impact will be on the implementation of the defense review, as I've already alluded to, and more importantly, the execution of our defense mandate. And to this end, Chair, the Minister, the Secretary for Defense, and the Chief, I believe, of one mind that we need to adjust the level of ambition and work is being done. And we are engaging with the Minister as early as next week with proposals in terms of conceptual framework, what we think we can achieve and how we should move forward jointly as a Department of Defense. Chair, then from a social environment, we understand that South Africa remains a destination for migration. We understand the pressure on government for multiple social services, and we understand the possibility of violent protests. We have a very young population, but we have a population that is also unemployed, and there could be cases of domestic instability, as we saw in KZN last year. Then these are what we call our protest tipping points, of which we remain keenly aware that may require the SANDF to deploy in support of the South African police services. And then, Chair, we're also mindful of our role in terms of border safeguarding, that due to the limited capacity we have to deploy the full 22 subunits, we're using sense technology and funding was provided by the National Treasury, and we've received the last 85 million in year for border or sensor technology. We do, however, have an arrangement with the National Treasury that where we cannot use the 85 million for sensor technology, we may use the last 85 million to upgrade the infrastructure on the border to support the SANDF deployments. Chairman, in terms of technology, we're highly aware of cyber. This is where the contribution of defense is critical to priority six of government, a secured cyber space. And defense is being led by State Security Agency in its initiatives to operationalize a cyber capability on a national level that has been embedded within our plans, and it remains priority of the chief or one of the chief focus areas to establish a cyber defense capability that is being attended to. Then, Chair, if I move very quickly, physical environment, we speak about uneven and extreme global weather. And I think we've seen this in the KZN environment as well, that have happened there, where the SANDF is called upon to support local government. And we remain aware of maritime threats, where the Navy is supporting us through their coastal patrols and their long distance maritime patrols as well. I've already alluded to all the requirements to deploy the SANDF. One of the questions that we have received is the Velocity project, which is in terms of the SONA 2022, where Defence is the implementation agency for the Velocity project. But Chair, we're making note that this will not come from the DoD's budget, but there will be a memorandum of understanding with the Department of Public Works and Infrastructure on a cost recovery basis when and so required. Deployment of the SANDF, Chair, I've spoken to this already in terms of peace support operations, prevention of conflict, humanitarian assistance and disaster relief, and our maritime piracy engagements. In terms of HR, I think I've already alluded to this. We will continue to be faced, Chair, with continued HR pressures over the 22M test area, where the SANDF is other. Deployed with unplanned military operations, this continues to place pressure on the departmental budget. But in terms of our employment of youth within the department as a contribution to government priorities, we currently are employing 36% of our structure is youth, and we regard youth in the department as those between the ages of 18 to 34. And a new ministerial directive is that percentage to increase to at least 40% in our next planning cycle. Chair, with logistics, I've spoken about logistics, the challenges we have within the logistic environment. We intend to have a DoD overarching logistics strategy in place that will help us to attend to the challenges that we are facing within the logistics environment, whether it be supply chain management and our ICT legacy systems. The bottom part of the screen, Chair, is where we speak about ICT in general within the department, whether it's from a governance perspective or an implementation perspective. We have policies in place. However, the ICT system itself is lacking. Chair, I've already alluded to the fact that a priority of the chief in the sector is to procure an off-the-shelf ICT system that will be able to integrate all resources within the Department of Defense, and this will be a priority for 22-23. We'll attempt to identify funding and how this will be rolled out within the MTEP planning cycle of 23 onwards. Chair, I'll move quickly through this. I've alluded to the fact that as a department, we are obligated to support the MTSF priorities of government, Pillar 1, 2, and 3. Defence has a contribution to make in terms of priority 6 and 7, 6 being our domestic responsibility and 7 being our external responsibility. So in very brief, Chair, in terms of priority 6, we ensure that our borders are effectively defended and protected, and there's where I spoke about the 15 subunits, our support to the SAPS and other government departments where required, and the support of our Navy to protect our maritime borders. Secondly, within priority six is the cyberspace, and I think I've already alluded to cybersecurity. We are being guided by State Security Agency, and we will take our cue from the SSA. In terms of priority seven, external deployments through the Chief SANDF, we ensure 100% compliance to our external peace support operations, rescue operations, and humanitarian and assistance operations. So the targets that you see within this APP are fully funded and can be executed accordingly. Chair, let me not, this is our indirect contribution to government priorities. I'm sure all members have read through this, but let me stick to the time. Chair, in terms of priorities that the department will be following through this year, we've got three ministerial priorities that are outlined in the plan. I will just allude to the priorities themselves, priority one, two, and three. Priority one is the strategic direction that the minister provides to the Department of Defense. There's three components. The first part is ensuring the implementation of the plan to arrest the decline. And that is guided by the Defense Review. She has already alluded to the fact that we have challenges in terms of funding and our inability to fully implement the plan to arrest the decline. However, the ministerial direction in terms of a revised policy or level of ambition is being provided, and the minister is guiding us in terms of that future trajectory. And the minister has pronounced that the structures of the department must be relooked at to ensure efficiency, non-duplication of functions, and a host of other issues as well. Second priority of the minister, to ensure that the department has got sound governance, administration, and accountability at all levels within the department. And you'll find, Chair, that the Chief and the SecDef, all their focus areas are geared to support these ministerial priorities. So when we get there, we'll speak about them. And she also says that the establishment of force levels, this is to ensure that the HR requirements for both the Secretariat and the SANDF must be set at certain levels that we are able to execute our core mandates. Chair, the last priority of the minister is to ensure that our exercise, our audit commitments are executed as required by government. And this is in the purview of the Chief SANDF, and this speaks to the maintenance of our capabilities. Chair, I've already alluded to right in the beginning, when the budget declines, your prime mission equipment also becomes compromised. So there, the Chief is doing what he can with the budget that he has. And then finally, the final directive of the Minister is our audit commitments in support of government national development agenda must continue, and that is embedded within our plan priority 6 and 7 of the MTSF priorities. Chair, with your permission, what follows now is the priorities of the Chief and the Secretary for Defence. So with your permission, Chair, I won't go through all of these. They are similar to the Minister's, but they give detail and more flesh to what must be done. And all the level two plans within the Department of Defense has integrated the SecDef and the Chief's focus areas. Should we just paging? Apologies for the short delay. Chair, then in terms of DoD performance information, as you're aware, we have a strategic plan in the Department of Defense, our 2020-2025 strategic plan, and there are two performance indicators within that plan that we are pursuing for the five-year period. The first one is within the environment of the Secretary for Defense, supported by the CSANDF, and there we monitor the number of audits, qualified audit opinions. Our baseline where we started was 6, and the target that we have at the end of the strategic plan cycle 2024-25 is 1. We're aware of the fact that currently we're dealing with 4 qualified audit opinions, but I believe that through the collective organizational effort, we will be able to reduce the fall and get closer to the one within the next 2 to 3 years as per the strategic plan. And then the second performance indicator in the 5-year plan, more in the ambit of the CSANDF, is our percentage compliance with audit defense commitments. And we have a set target of 100%. So where the chief does deploy, we ensure that funding is available from a department side, and where additional funding is required, we are usually supplemented from the National Treasury. Chair, I'll move quickly through the programs of the APP, program 1 to 8, starting with administration. I think you're all familiar with that we monitor policies, strategies, and plans. And Chair, you will see that the strategy performance indicator for this planning cycle has been removed. And the logic behind that was, while we are revising a more stable funding trajectory and an adjusted level of ambition, our strategy will then take its cue from that document. So if the strategy is not available, it would be pointless to put in a performance indicator with zero progress. So we have decided that for only one cycle, 22-23, that indicator has been removed, and we hope to have it back in the APP next year once that level of ambition has been attended to within the department. What is important, Chair, that from a policy perspective, and the Minister, Chief, and Sector are very clear that policies in this department must be in place. They guide what must be done and what must not be done, and that allows consequence management to happen as well. We're aware of the PFMA, the Supply Chain Management Instruction 3 of 21, and the Secretary for the Defence has directed that our current policy that deals with supply chain management must be updated to ensure that the content of the TSMA is now included within our departmental policies. And this will seek to improve compliance, accountability, and transparency in the procurement of goods and services, and reduce the abuse of the supply chain management system and ensure value for money. So that is a priority that we're attending to in here. So I've already spoken to strategy performance indicator, why it has been removed. And the second reason behind removing the strategy indicator, your strategy portion is a funded long-term trajectory. But where defense year on year has a declining budget, long-term planning has now become problematic, and the department has defaulted to MTF planning. And as a military organization, it's not the ideal situation where we would want to be, but these are the realities. So we are currently doing MTF planning. Chair, there's been note that the ministry budget allocation remains excessively high. There was a proposal that we would, and you'll remember that the PNU is located within the ministry's budget. And Chair, we've indicated that there would be an administration shift to SAMS during 22-23, but this will not happen. It's the intent of the minister to keep the PMU within her budget. But as a department, we will make clear, and this is a requirement of the PCD, that we make the content of the minister's budget available and more transparent. So we will attend to this, but the PMU for this planning cycle will remain where it is, within the minister's office. Then, Chair, there's an increase in the legal services budget. We're aware of the increase, and this is for transcription services of any legal or legislative documents into the languages of our 11 national languages. And then there was a concern from the PCD regarding an amount of 78 million allocated for advertising, and the question was, how is this justifiable in the context of a declining budget? So, Chair, we just want to correct that statement that advertising in the department includes both advertising and all communication functions. So our communication functions could be ceremonial events, it could be publications, it could be radio station interviews, etc. So advertising in defense contains the two. And advertising is critical because it fosters consensus of defense, it keeps the public informed what defense is doing, and what we are doing well, and where we're not doing that well, is to mitigate and let the public understand how things are evolving with the defense environment. There was a question, Chair, and this is in terms of our payment of suppliers within 30 days. We understand there's a requirement from the national government to have a 100% compliance. Chair, we are only at 75 and we are planning to remain within 75 due to our, amongst others, our ICT systems that are not integrated. And I think that goes back to the requirement of the sector to have a system that integrates all of our ICT systems that will speed up the processing of invoices. But we also have challenges where suppliers submit invoices that do not comply to what the CFO requires within an invoice, which delays our process. And we intend then to remain on 75% for this planning cycle. Chair, in terms of this, is just to wrap up the administration program of primary importance is gender-based violence. We're aware of this requirement. It's contained in our APP, but because this is a new requirement under the guidance of both executive and chiefs, Chief HR is managing gender-based violence for the 22 planning cycle, and the performance indicator has been included with Chief HR, and there will be a number of sexual misconduct prevention programs presented to all employees across the entire Department of Defense in this planning cycle. However, where we do detect cases of gender-based violence, the military police stands ready where such cases are reported, and our legal services division is also ready to do investigations and prosecutions where and if required. Chair, then for each program, we just indicate to the PCD the full costs. In this case for administration, it's 5.7, but there's a full cost requirement. Let me correct myself. There's an allocation of 5.7, but there's a full cost requirement of 7 billion. So there's a shortfall of 1.4, which impacts on our ability to stop our HR component. It compromises our HR structures and our ICT support systems. So, Chair, once we start to cost what a corporate ICT system will cost, the full cost amount will increase significantly both in administration and in general support under the CMIS environment as well. And we also see that the lack of an appropriate budget impacts on the ability of the Secretary for Defense and the Chief to execute governance in the Department of Defense and render the required levels of support to the executive authority. Chair, moving to the fourth employment program. I'm not going to run through all the indicators, but where there was a concern raised, or not a concern, but an issue or a question by the research team, we've attempted to respond to that. The first question that we have is in within the joint support program, there has been a reduction of X billion in regional support. And Chair, that is a correct statement. And it is due to the fact that the budget is declining and we have to make calls on where we reduce such budget. Whether the poll is correct or not, that's reality of the decision the department has made. There's a question about contractors, that the price or the budget for contractors, and I won't confine my response to only forced employment, but across all the budget programs remains high. And Chair, that is also correct. But the contractors are required to support and sustain our operations. They're also required to sustain and support our prime mission equipment. And we do have contracts in place that cannot be cancelled at the drop of a hat. But the Minister has also noted the cost of contractors and said our department should see where we can to have our own in-house capability to deal with these issues and hopefully over the MTEF start to reduce the budget allocated to contractors. So we're aware of that. And the department will attempt to deal with that as well. And Chair, yes, in terms of S&Ts, there's an increase across some of the programs in S&T, but you'll be aware as well that our soldiers are deployed now in the Mozambique area, and the costs are associated with increased deployments of our soldiers. Another question, Chair, was our reimbursements from the United Nations. Our previous planning targets were set at 52%, and we are attempting to push that target up for the 22 cycle to 70%. And the question is, how do we intend to achieve this? And from the chief's environment, what we intend to do is the equipment in the deployment areas, which is not at a serviceable standard, will be rotated back to South Africa. in terms of ammunition, where they are not meeting the required specifications, they will be rotated back. There will be an acquisition plan of what ammunition is required in the deployment areas before the end of this year, and appropriate ammunition will be then sent to the deployment areas. As I've already mentioned, all equipment that is beyond economical repair will be replaced and sent back to South Africa and be auctioned by the newly appointed auctioneer, and new equipment will hopefully be sent to the deployment areas. And specifically, a task team has been established to engage with the National Treasury to ensure that we maximize our reimbursements. So, Chair, I think a lot of initiatives are underway already as we speak to push up that 70%. And the reason we want to maximize our reimbursements, because where funds are available at the United Nations and they come back to the department, we are able to redirect them into the programs that have budgetary requirements. Chair, moving on, this is the conclusion of the Force Employment Program. Question again, are we sure that we will be able to fully comply to our static standby force pledge? And our response is that currently two modern brigades have been established as part of the readiness preparation of the SA Army, which includes a mechanized and motorized brigade, and this is sufficient to suffice our static standby force pledge requirements. And then a final question in terms of force employment, the Minister's performance agreement with the President said that we are to conduct four maritime coastal patrols. And the question was, are we sure we can? And yes, the confirmation is yes, we can. Budgets have been allocated and the Navy will conduct those four coastal patrols. Chair, we just indicate from the force employment environment, 3.7 is allocated against a 5.3 billion requirement, a shortfall of 1.3, obviously then impacting on our ability of the Joint Force Employment Program to provide mission-ready forces and special operational capabilities to meet requirements of both the review and government as well. Chair, in terms of landward, the targets are included inside the ACP. A question was, the landward training targets have reduced from last year down to this year. There's a significant decrease. And you will recall, Chair, that the Army was creating the modern brigades and required additional training opportunities last year, hence the 5,000 odd opportunities. That has been finalized, and the Army will now stabilize its training opportunities over the MTEC period. There's a decline, Chair, and you will find this in the support capability budget of the SA Army, and the question from PCD has been, what will the impact on the support capability be? Chair, as I said earlier in the presentation, when we reduce support budget allocations, it impacts directly on prime mission equipment and the ability of the SANDF to conduct its operations. So the question was, what is the impact? Well, obviously, it will be the degradation over time of the SA Army capabilities, its prime mission equipment, resulting in eventually a complete shutdown of that function as no logistics support in terms of spares and other support requirements are available. And Chair, you will hear this across all the programs within the SANDF. In terms of landward, Chair, the biggest program we have, a 15 billion allocation, against a 26 billion full requirement, a shortfall of approximately 11 billion. And obviously this will impact directly on the Army's ability to prepare and provide combat ready landward capabilities in terms of the JFE. Air defense, Chair, this is where we had the most questions from the PCD research team, and we'll attempt to answer them. The first question was, there's a reduction in the helicopter capability of the Air Force, and this is a correct statement, and there will be a reduction across all programs, and this is due to budget. So yes, there's a decline in the helicopter capability, but we are hoping, Chair, that reimbursements from the United Nations, we will be funneling them to the SA Air Force to assist in the declining budget allocation. Then in terms of, there's a 310 million rand increase in transport and maritime capability, and the question is for what purpose? And the response is that our transport capability is what transports the VVIPs VIPs and troops and goods, as well as our deployment areas and domestically as well. Then in terms of technical support services, there's a reduction in that allocation to the Air Force as well, which again, Chair, will limit the ability of the combat capability in terms of training opportunities and force availability. Then there's an increased allocation to travel and subsistence, and GI spoke about this earlier on. This is an increase due to the deployment of the soldiers, so this is due to our employment requirements. Then in terms of training and development increases, we see an increase in the budget to the Air Force. In terms of training and development, this is the correct observation. And the reason for that, Chair, is to ensure that the currency training of our pilots, and this is being conducted abroad, so that's why there's an increase so that our pilots remain current in terms of training. And there's a small amount from the Air Force to the SDA, and the question is why such a small amount? Well, budget allocation once again, Chair. So yes, there's a small amount allocated to the SDA, but the Air Force in the meantime, and this is in terms of aircraft maintenance contracts, guidelines are being sought from the Air Force to establish 5-year contracts in terms of their contractors and not only 3 years, which is the current limitation posed by the PFMA. But indeed, that is a correct statement in terms of SDA funding. Chair, a question from the committee again is a reduction in flying hours in last year versus this year from 12,000 to 7,000. Indeed, there is a proposal and we are planning to reduce our flying hours, but this is due to the incremental reduction in the air defense program budget. Chair, then to wrap up on from the Air Force's side. Allocation to the Air Force, 6.2 billion. Full cost, 9 billion, shortfall of approximately 2.8 billion, with an impact again, as with the Landward Program on preparation and combat ready air defense capabilities. Maritime, so I won't go through all the targets, I'll just attempt to address the questions. Within the maritime program, a reduction in the base support capability for the 22-23 planning cycle. Well, that function was closed down, and that was the discretion of the chief. So there was no allocation to base support capability within the maritime domain for this planning cycle. Then the question was, is there additional funding for both Project Biro and Hotel in the SDA? And we confirmed, Chair, that funding is available for both projects, Biro and Hotel. However, for the hotel, there may be a downstream rate of exchange escalation that we may have to deal with downstream, but currently both projects are funded. Maritime concluding, Chair, allocation of 4.6 billion, full requirement of 7 odd billion, and a shortfall of 2.8, again, impacts on preparation and combat-ready maritime systems. Health support. In terms of health support, there was a question, what are the reasons for the military health maintenance sub-program not receiving any allocation over the medium term? And this program, apologies, this is one that was closed down during last year, that's why no allocation was given to that sub-program. And then in terms of strategic direction, in terms of military health support, the strategic direction sub-program increased. That's because the funding for Operation Tucano and the foreign learning opportunities have now been centralized under the strategic direction program within military health support. Then a concern was raised, or an observation was raised, about the 624 million rand that is allocated in the military health support program for outsourcing services. This is correct, Chair, and the question was, what is the department doing to try and reduce this amount? So our response is that the maintenance of our facilities, the repairs and the upgrades and refurbishments of all healthcare facilities, we will attempt to do that through the CLOG, through the works formation. Secondly, the SAMS environment will attempt to negotiate agreed tariffs and standard tariffs when members are paying for medical care outside of the SANDF. But what contributes as well, Chair, is the medical inflation costs, which are often above the inflation, often double what the inflation is. But initiatives are underway, and we will attempt to see if we can reduce that 6 to 4.5 million in the outer years of this current planning cycle. Chair, then the allocation is 5.5, full cost of 9, a shortfall of 3, again impacting on the ability of the SAMS environment to staff medical personnel, inadequate structures, obsolete equipment, degrading facilities, and the requirement for new technology which is required in the SAMS environment. Chair, in terms of defense intelligence, we see an increase in the target for defense intelligence, and there has been an increase in the budget allocation to the DI environment. And the PCD may wish to consider... Chair, I'm just paging one back. So, Chair, the PCB may consider writing to the Joint Standing Committee on Intelligence to alert them to this transfer of approximately a quarter billion rand, and this may require oversight by the Joint Standing Committee on Intelligence. So then to wrap up on the DI environment, the allocation to defense intelligence is 1.1, the full requirement is 1.3, so there's a smaller shortfall of 175 million. Obviously impacting on the ability to staff skilled personnel and that are required for intelligence and counterintelligence operations. Chair, coming towards the end of the presentation, the general support program. There was a question why an allocation for science and technology was made for the in-year. We had no allocation last year. A small amount of 278 million has been made available this year, and that will be used for defense evaluation and research institutes where we have test and evaluation requirements. Although this is not the full amount that we require, this 278 will support these test and evaluation requirements. Then the question was, there's an increase in our property payment spending since 2020-21, and this is caused by the fact that more funds were required to pay for unplanned and new leases within the Department of Defense. Chair, then just wrapping up the general support program. The amount allocated there, Chair, is 6.5 billion, but there's a full requirement for the logistics environment of 3.3 billion, and we've outlined the implication of all these shortfalls as we go, especially in terms of facilities. We've spoken about stock levels. We've spoken about an appropriate ICT system, and I believe such an ICT system will far exceed 1 billion, but once we've done the costing, these figures will need to be updated as well. Military police, they are part of general support as well. There's a shortfall within the military police, and the impact on the military police was inability to have the integrated case docket management system, but obviously, Chair, this must form part of the broader IDES system that we would wish to procure. Impact on ceremonial support, inability to staff skilled investigators, and then obviously the police have specialized equipment that they require that has reached their end of life cycle that we need to replace, but we are experiencing challenges there too. Facilities of the military police and the ability to establish the sexual offences investigation structure in support of gender-based violence that cannot be fully established at this stage. Chair, in terms of the risks, with your permission, I'll only speak to the risk itself. You are aware that the mitigation actions on the right-hand side are embedded within the plans of the level two environments. So I'll only confine myself to what public risks are, but Chair, maybe also to note that many of the mitigation risks or initiatives that are required are also funding driven, but where we can, the department will implement these mitigations. So we continue to deal with governance issues, and I alluded to that in terms of policy, that our policies must remain relevant, and that our approval processes and the speed at which we approve our policies and updating our policies will receive attention and continue. They have been part of our risk register for a number of years, but we continue to deal with it, and I believe that we will expedite this during the current planning cycle. Prevalence of corruption and fraud, and maybe with the implementation of the supply chain management policy or instruction 3, much of this will be attended to as well. But in other areas, we have the anti-corruption and anti-fraud policy and strategy that we intend to implement to help combat corruption, fraud, where and if possible, or prevalent within the Department of Defense. Then, high prevalence of litigation, and we've assessed, Chair, that this emanates sometimes also internally and externally to the Department of Defense, where our own employees and members do not prescribe to internal policies, processes, and procedures, which could result in high levels of litigation, that we are attending to as well. Through the implementation of consequence management, amongst other things, ensuring strengthened control mechanisms of governance fora, and Chair, you'll see that this is included in both the chief and the sector focus areas, consequence management within the Department of Defense, and the Minister has also pronounced that this is a critical issue she would want to keep close to her to make sure that this happens as well. Chair, I've already spoken to the deteriorating DOD facilities that are deteriorating. And almost in conclusion, sir, forfeiting property rights where we have possible land claims on DOD property that may impact on the SANDF where we have infrastructure. So then number 6 and 7, both of these are related to ICT governance and implementation. And through the procurement of an ICT system, we hope that you'll be able to mitigate these risks. But again, I say the costs attached to such a system could run in the millions or billions, but that determination we'll make in year as we go. We have no conditional grant in the department, and we have no triple teams in the Department of Defense in this planning cycle. And Chair, with your permission, that brings me to the end of my presentation, and I think I did that within 1 hour. Thank you, Chair.
Hello, colleagues. Yes. I was muted. Thank you very much for the presentation, very comprehensive. I'm happy that it started to touch on the questions that the colleagues had discussed in the last meeting following the presentation on your budget and plan, your plan and budget by the content advisor as well as the researcher. All right, colleagues, but let me just check. SecDef, any other comment you want to make at this stage?
No, Chairperson. Remember that this went also with the review of the data review of records, and we have an update on the progress we're making on that. I don't know whether you prefer to take it now so that we have the one discussion, or you want to discuss and then we take that after. We'll be guided by you, Chair. Thank you.
Yes, maybe let's do that. Just before we do it, SecDef, I just need to remind the team, your team, that on the 16th of March, we received a presentation from the AG on two items in the main. It was on their audit opinion on contracts related to Project Tusano. And the presentation on status of records review for all the entities, the two departments plus the two entities reporting to the department. Subsequently to that, I was tasked to write a letter to the minister bringing the following to her attention. The letter is dated the 17th of March. Dear Honorable Minister, the Auditor General's report on audit opinions of contracts related to Project Tusano and the status of records review for the Defense Portfolio Committee. The Portfolio Committee on Defense and Military Veterans met with the AG South Africa on the 16th of March, 2022, in order to receive a briefing on the AG South Africa reports on audit opinions of contracts related to Project Tusano and the status of records review for the Defense Portfolio Committee. During this engagement, the AG raised a number of areas of concern within the reports, which warrant further deliberation. Among these, the AG office also highlighted a major challenge with regards to the failure of the DoD to supply this audit institution with the required information, especially in relation to the audit of, in relation to the audit on Operation Tusano contracts. The committee was advised that the ministry was sent correspondence in this regard, and no response was provided. As a result, the AG South Africa declared the finding and concluded on a limitation of scope. We therefore wish to table these two reports with the ministry. The committee further agrees that the minister is required to provide responses to the two reports of the AG South Africa. A meeting will be scheduled at a date to be determined by the committee, in order for the minister to finish the committee with the responses of the two reports. For any queries, you contact us, and we gave her the address, what you call the number. So we basically, it was on the 16th of March when we received the report. And this is the first available opportunity where your department responds to the status of a records review. And so we expect that you deal with all the issues that are raised by the AG in that status of records review today. And then we'll then schedule another meeting then to deal with the issues related to Operation Tusano contracts. So I want to believe that you have since received the status of records review and SECDEF.
Yes, Chair, that's what we are going to present on in terms of the progress report. And then just to say, Chair, that Tusano is still undergoing audits right now. You would recall that at some stage we were scheduled to present the Tusano report to the audit committee, but it was sent back and we are still to come back to the portfolio committee on the issue of Tusano, but also the one on fraud and corruption. We did, yes, we were privy to the letter that was written to the minister, Chairperson, We did have some challenges in the beginning in terms of the supply of information. Subsequent to that, in our interaction then with a colleague from AG, we then wanted to find out from them whether on the concerns that were raised by our colleagues in the log environment that is sensitivity related. We then suggested that would the team from the AG's office be amenable to going to the premises of the log environment where they will be finished with the documents and then they can come through and deal with the matters that they agreed to. And the same was then discussed with logistics and they didn't have a problem with that. So where I am sitting, my understanding is that the team of the AG did go there and that the information was made available to them. But I will also follow up on that one because I think they should have gone through that. So that was the reaction that we had and that is the update also I gave to my executive authority. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Secretary, for this update. Of course, we're not dealing with Operation Tosana now. We'll deal with it on another day. I wanted just to tell you where we left off on these two items. I'm happy that you have since made progress, especially in relation to this other one that we'll deal with on another day. Now, let's then take a presentation on the status of a records review. And who's going to take us through, SecDef?
Thank you, Chairperson. As I alluded earlier, I am accompanied by the CFO, and he's here with Mr. Adam Abosi, that comes from the finance structure, and he is the one who's going to take us through the presentation. And maybe just as way of translating the presentation, Chairperson, just to say that I think sometime in March, we actually presented our action plan to the Portfolio Committee on the issues that had been raised in the audit report and what it is that we were doing as a department to implement the recommendations of the AG. So today's presentation is going to be focusing on providing you with the progress that we have made since we last presented to yourself in March on the action plan of what we're doing. Thank you, Chair. And without further ado, I'd allow Mr. Abosi to present. Thank you.
That's fine. I accept that, SecDef, because the two reports, the one we received on the 2nd of March on the implementation of the of your 2020-2021 audit action plan and this one somehow overlap. But obviously, when we think this one doesn't go enough to address one or two areas, we will raise them and we'll expect you to address them. Okay, let me just then invite, is it Mr. Obonsi and the CFO? I don't know who would start. Over to your colleagues. Thank you so much.
Good morning, Chair, members of the PCD. Chair, as the SecDef and yourself have given the background introduction to the presentation, it basically deals with the department's response to the digital records review that was finalized at the end of the financial, or at the end of the calendar year, and presented to yourselves in February, or to the department in February, and to yourselves in March of this year. The main purpose is obviously to just give you a background of where we are as a department in terms of dealing with the issues raised by the AG and where we are now before we finalize the financial statements. As you are aware, the AG did issue their audit report in September of 2021. And after they issued their audit report, between then and December, they normally do an interim audit to deal with our readiness for the next audit cycle. Hence, they did the status of records review until the end of December 2021, which is for the third quarter. They did raise observations with regard to where we are as a department in terms of audit reports and our readiness for the next cycle audit. They did issue findings on five areas, which dealt with oversight and monitoring, financial management, procurement and contract management, compliance management, and material irregularity.
So the next slides will deal with each of these areas of observations from the AG and what we have done about it so far. The first one deals with oversight and monitoring. So one of their concerns was with regard to our action plans. They raised the issue of our action plans were not adequately monitored and we did not implement the recommendations of the department, of the Auditor General. As I said, the audit report was issued in September and the finalizers review at the end of December. So basically it was 2 months after the audit report was issued for us to deal with our action plans. However, it must also be noted that we do have accountability management committee meetings on a monthly basis. These are chaired by the Secretary for Defense and attended by the Chief of the SNDF and all Chiefs of Service and Division. These action plans are presented and discussed at these monthly meetings, and the service and divisions give a status of their implementation and where they are in terms of dealing with the findings and the qualification raised by the AG. There was another finding that they raised with regard to the CAE posts and the senior management, the DDGs within the Department of Defense, and the vacancies that have been there for some time. They also raised concerns with regard to the internal audit division and some key areas within the department that are not adequately resourced to be able to do the work based on the size of the department. There was a CAE post and 3 additional DDG posts that were advertised in the year 2020, and then they went through a process of staffing. The process is now with the DPSA, where the department identified specific individuals to be appointed. Unfortunately, the DPSA had concerns with regard to the structure of the organization, and the department was in discussions with DPSA to resolve those concerns from their side. There are also some very key positions that have to do with the military police environment and the legal environment that assist the department in terms of managing governance and accountability within the organization. The concern is due to the budget cut imposed by National Treasury, it became a bit difficult to expand structures. You are aware of our concerns with regard to irregular expenditure and where we are in terms of even disclosing irregular expenditure for the underfunding of the compensation of employees. So this is a bit of a concern for the department, but we hope the discussions with DPSA will yield some kind of progress at the end for us to be able to finalize the processes. There were also findings with regards to the inadequate control of tangible capital assets. This was one of our qualifications for the last financial year. We do acknowledge as a department the existence of assets is a bit of a challenge, since the bulk of our work is dependent on manual interventions. And these are also dependent on asset rotation that must be done by service and divisions. There are, however, controls that we've implemented as a department to ensure there are stocktake processes that take place on a constant basis so that we don't have repeat findings with regard to this. Most of the items that were also identified by the AG last year with regard to existence and completeness, most of them have been resolved. Those that we have challenges with in terms of tracing, the different service and divisions have instituted board of inquiries that are still going on at unit level to ensure that the discrepancies identified by the AG will be finalized before the 2021-2022 audit reports being issued once the AG finalizes their audit process. And I think the presentation before with regard to our APP raised the concerns about the manual interface we have with the department and our agent, IT and IT systems, but this also depends on budget allocations for us to be able to improve our automated systems within the organization, for us to be able to resolve some of these concerns and issues. There was also findings with regard to leave transactions that the AG raised were not adequately recorded and managed within the department. And this was also one of our qualifications for the previous financial year. The Chief Human Resources has issued an instruction, which was right after the audit cycle, to all service and divisional chiefs to ensure that they manage the leave within their areas of control and submit compliance certificates on a quarterly basis to confirm the status of leave management within the department so that we are sure that all leave that we have within the organization are accounted for and recorded on the system. We are also ensuring that we are able to finalize all these unrecorded needs before we finalize and issue our financial statements to the Auditor General, International Treasury, before the 31st of May. There were also findings related to the irregular expenditure of the department that was not fully recorded. Hence, we received a qualification on completeness of irregular expenditure. And I think the last time we did meet, and sometime last year when we finalized our annual report and we presented to the Portfolio Committee, we did indicate that the CFO and the SecDef have instructed the Internal Audit Division for them to audit all procurement units, all our procurement units, and to identify any additional irregular expenditure that may not have been accounted for, so that we can ensure the completeness of those irregular expenditure in our financial statement. What the Internal Audit Division has done, they have done most of the work by now, and they have identified additional irregular expenditure that was not accounted for initially. We are in the process of verifying these irregular expenditure with supporting documentation, and will update our registers and our financial statements before we submit the full financial statement to the Office of the Auditor General and National Treasury by the 31st of May for them to audit our financial statements. Chair, you also raised the issue of Project Tusano, and the SecDef has given you a background of where we are. And you have also instructed that we'll come back to you and give you full details of that. However, after the AG issued their audit finding last year and on the status of records review, the department has decided to disclose a certain amount of irregular expenditure that we spent that the AG stated was not in line with legislation. So when we finalize the financial statements and submit to the Auditor General, we will include the irregular expenditure incurred on Project Tusano. There were also findings with regard to procurement and contract management, where the AG's concern were there were various findings relating to procurement and contract management, hence our conclusions of irregular expenditure disclosed in the financial statement. As presented to you about two meetings ago, we did also indicate that we have a governance risk and compliance committee that is providing all the job training to the various procurement entities within the department. These findings that this committee identifies based on ad hoc visits to procurement units are shared among all the 73 procurement units for the best practices to be for them to ensure that they've dealt with all the misunderstandings and misrepresentations with regard to following procurement prescripts. We are also considering as a department to possibly reduce the 73 procurement units that we have to a manageable number that will effectively and efficiently manage procurement with the right skilled personnel within the department. We've also approached the National School of Government to assist us in providing SCM supply chain management related training to our procurement practitioners. There was also a finding raised by the AG with regard to the positioning of the procurement function within the Department of Defense, whether it should be within the logistics division or within the finance division. But as you are aware, Department of Defense is a military division environment, and a bulk of our procurement-related transactions have an impact on the mandate of the organization with regard to how we procure for the deployment of our soldiers. However, the recommendation made by the AG and what is written in this PFMA is under consideration by the department. There was also concerns with regard to consequence management. And Chair, you and the members of the PCA also always raise the concerns and the challenges on how the Department of Defense manages consequence management. There are a high value of irregular and fruitless expenditure, and the AG's concerns were we do not issue or we do not act and manage consequence management in terms of these irregularities that have been identified, and we don't investigate these irregularities on time. We do acknowledge as a department that procurement functions do procurement related investigations do take a bit longer than usual. However, the chief of the SNDF and the SecDef are doing everything they can as management of the organization to fast track the finalization of the Board of Inquiries and investigations into these irregularities. And currently the chief and the SecDef are in the process of instituting consequence management on the military personnel and the civilian personnel, because you are aware that the department is about 90% military and 10% civilian, but we're doing everything we can as an organization to ensure the recommendations made from the Board of Inquiries and all our investigative reports will be instituted and finalized. Chair, getting to the end of the presentation, the AG also raised concerns with regard to material irregularities. In our audit report of 2020-2021, they did issue 5 material irregularities, which were in, which was also reported in our annual report. The first one deals with the asset management contracts and the Echo Park lease fruitless expenditure. These investigations have been finalized and Board of Inquiries have been finalized, or they are just in the process of being finalized for the Echo Park lease agreement. The recommendations that were made and that will be made will be submitted to the Chief of the SNDF and the SecDef for them to finalize the institution of consequence management with regard to the recommendations made in the Board of Inquiries and investigation report. There was also a finding on the unfair award of jet fuel contracts. The department disagrees with the findings of the AG because this had to do with changing of delivery of the fuel from rail to road. And there was obviously a change in price, which we did present to the members of the portfolio committee. The AG, however, does not agree with our assessment, and they have referred this specific finding to the Directorate for Priority Crime Investigation. There was also a finding of a material irregularity raised with regard to the thermal scanners. This was walk-through thermal scanners. This was right at the heart of the COVID-19. It was in the year 2020, around April, May of 2020, where we were deployed as a department to go and assist the country in dealing with the COVID-19 pandemic. The National Treasury list of prizes did not include thermal scanners because, as you are aware, the country and the world did not know how to treat those issues. So the AG raised a finding of us not buying these thermal scanners at a cost-effective manner, and it was not based on value for money. So we do not agree with the auditors because there was nothing else we could do then when we had to go out and assist the country and deal with the pandemic. So that is where we are with regard to that. And then there was a finding on the importation of the unregistered drug, which has been presented to the portfolio committee. We are aware of the issues that we have presented. And at the last portfolio committee meeting, the minister indicated that she will instruct the chief of the SNDF to deal with instituting consequence management based on the MTT report. Chair and members of the PCD, thank you. This is the end of our presentation.
Thank you very much for the presentation, colleagues. I think we now can entertain, we can engage these two presentations. Let me just look at on the platform to see if there are any hands. Colleagues, can you hear me?
Yeah, Chair, we can hear you.
You can hear me very well. And I don't see the hands.
My hand is up, sir.
My hand is up. Maybe my system is a bit of a challenge. All right, let me take you, Mr. Murray.
Mr. Murray,
deal with both of them at the same time, or? Okay, that's fine.
Okay. Sure. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you very much for the presentations. I want to start off with the last presentation, if I may. A number of these reports and the answers are very similar to what we have heard basically every year since I can recall that I've been in the portfolio committees. Can we get a comparison of the findings now and the findings in the past and the answers now and the answers in the past? Because the difficult thing for me is to identify matters that have been identified and mentioned in the past, and now we must, you know, reinvent the wheel again. And that to me is counterproductive, and it is unfair. However, so if I can first request that the department give us that comparison, because that will indicate to us to what extent have they improved and progressed and on what is identified on the same issues in the past. And it doesn't matter whether it's a new minister or a new chief of SANDF, because it's primarily the office of the minister, the office of the SecDef, and the office of the chief of the SANDF or CLOC or whoever that must deal with these matters. It cannot start, you know, from fresh if there's a new minister or a new person involved. So that will be appreciated. And then in terms of the last one, the last presentation, is it so that when the Auditor General identified typical stuff, and I will use one example, where one of the five was the Eco Park lease. So in other words, leases is a problem, and leases, get a reaction of a qualification or an irregular expenditure. If that is the case, we know that the old St. George's Hotel lease, as I understand, is also based on an irregular process. So do they, if I can use the word, learn from the Auditor General's findings and not repeat that? Because if it stays as a repetitive action into the future, just, generating new issues identified by the Auditor General, then it means that nobody is learning from that, and it means that, you know, expenses are irregular and we just go on with the same issues over and over, just a new expense. That is unacceptable. That is bad management. That is bad discipline. So that is very, very important. And specifically with regards to the St. George's Hotel's lease, I just want to get a, you know, feedback on that. Then in terms of the first presentation, the first presentation that was given to us, plus the responses to the answers, is not on the presentation that we have received. Can I request that we get the updated presentation as it was presented today to us? Because ours doesn't provide, for instance, for the responses to questions that they have picked up somewhere. So it is important to get us that information. On the first one, Chairperson, it is to a certain extent a very depressing situation that we have seen and experienced this morning again. The one thing that I pick up is eventually the problem is how do we deal with all these challenges that we've got. To a certain extent, many of these that I've seen and experienced seems like a desktop exercise. I often ask myself, what is, for instance, the purpose? And this is one of my questions. If you look at the four goals that has been set in the annual performance plans, goals 1, 2, 3, and 4, to what extent are those goals a hierarchy of priorities? And I ask that specific question because we have always said charity starts at home, and we have to protect our own first before we go to for instance, Mozambique or even DRC or wherever the case may be. But I get the impression that often goals 3 and 4 is higher in priority than goals 1 and 2. And I just want to get the response to what extent is that, a fact or, you know, what is the realities in that regard? And then also, you know, when you look at the phases, and obviously that's based on the defense review, I presume. And we know that we have not arrested the decline. And in terms of the trends that we have seen today, where even, you know, that work packages and packages 3 is dependent on the IT support and other priority supports and interventions. And we know that is not in the budget. So many of these things that we have seen today is great that they report that to us. But we have seen a constant shortfall or overspend, whatever you want to call it. And just want to mention a few that it seems like we have to find it somewhere in the budget. And every time it is, you know, there's no additional funding, but we have to find it in the budget. And the moment that they reprioritize current expenditure, I've asked it in the past and I ask it again. If it's not essential, if it's not critical, why was it budgeted for those items? And what is the justification for reprioritizing those expenses to whatever they want to redirect it? And it is obviously redirected to cost of employees, which we know is now going to be 69% of budget, and probably 70, because I see the cost of employees is 3 billion rand. We know that currently, and I'm talking about currently and not about the adjusted budget, currently Operation Vikela, 2.8 billion rand. We know that that Chariot, we have just heard about the 500 million rand. We know that Operation Mistral is going to be 1 billion rand. And we know that, and the things that we haven't seen in the action plans is our challenges with regards to prime mission equipment. We know that our Gripens is on the ground. We know that the majority of the Hawks is on the ground. We know that the Pilatus is on the ground. We know that only 4 of the 11 Rooivalk is serviceable. We know that only one C-130 is serviceable. We know that a limited amount of Oryx is serviceable. And the action plans do not indicate to me how they're going to address that problem. In each and every of the divisions, they show the shortfall. And if it's not addressed, you know, then we are in a dire situation. We are in this dire situation. We have been in this dire situation. So the action plans that I would expect is how are they going to mitigate that, not in terms of if this doesn't happen, you know, this will be the consequence of that. We know what is in the budget. We know what has been provided for. So how are they going to do that and how are they going to reprioritize that? I do not see that, and I am very concerned about that. We know about our 4 frigates, of which 3 is in the harbor. So they are committing themselves to a lot of things, and some of the questions or the answers to the questions that was presented by the presenter, that I would love to interrogate those, because some of that sounds very, very contradictory to me. You know, it seems like it is stealing from Peter to pay Paul. Now, you can't keep on stealing from Peter to pay Paul and think that there's going to be money tomorrow, because it's running out. You're stealing all that from yourself and you're spending it on things that will not assist us in those priorities. So those are my biggest questions that I would have loved to get information on that. I would very much like to know, because in a couple of instances it's been mentioned, it will be taken up by National Treasury. We know that we have asked this question in last year as well, and even in a parliamentary question. The minister has told us, and to me specifically, a question that they are busy with that process. They are talking to the National Treasury. Today, we have only heard that, you know, there will be talks. We don't know what the outcome of it is. And we are talking now about the budget. How are we going to deal with this going forward? We have not heard anything about Project Hoefeister. You know, as a decision been taken, There's no provision for Project Hoefeister, and we all know that was in Pretoria last week. What we have seen and what we have heard from both the Arms Corps and from Danel, there's no reference to that in this presentation. I accept the fact that Tusano, we will deal with that separately. So I will not ask more on Tusano. except for what the Auditor General has already done. On to Sano, I want to ask the question whether it has been considered, given the dilemmas of Denel and the capabilities of Denel, that is basically standing at ease and nothing is going on at the moment, whether they have considered and will consider, that task of Project Tusano for the maintenance and the cannibalization of the vehicles, of which Denel is the OEM, whether that project will rather be given to Denel, where people can earn salaries, and that can help Denel on a sustainable way forward as well. It has been mentioned about, rotation of equipment and that will be auctioned. We know that the whole project to Sano started because the previous chief of SANDF has halted all auctions of equipment and obsolete vehicles. Are we talking about that has been resuscitated and that those vehicles and equipment that has been rotated or brought back will be put on auction again? The whole matter of the ramp project. There was a reference to SA Medical Health Services, but not specifically on the ramp project. And we know that we are
discussing the ramp project. We're discussing the ramp project on Friday, on Thursday. Tomorrow.
Yes, but remember on Thursday we don't discuss the budget. The budget is with the portfolio committee. Although we're discussing the project, I'm talking about the financial implications.
Okay.
And yes, that please. There's no provision for any of the RAM project going forward. So I don't want us to discuss tomorrow anything about RAM and then we know that there's no money being provided. So this affects directly what we will discuss. So that's why I'm just mentioning that. On the equipment and the assets of the Department of Defense, seeing that they are apparently reconsidering auctioneering, are they considering, for a lack of a better word, liquidation of assets and land to generate revenue through that that can be used as ring fence revenue, especially for capital acquisitions for that. And then lastly, Chairperson, my apologies for the number of questions, but I just need to put this question as well. On the advertising, I just want to ask the question on the advertising, because in many cases we see less money for real operational matters, but there's still this increase on advertising. Why is that so necessary, given the constraints that we've got? Should it not be reprioritized and more costly being done? So the unplanned and new leases that was referred to in the answer, and that's why we obviously would have loved to get those answers in advance so that we can prepare ourselves for that. But there was a reference to that. Why are the unplanned leases necessary, given the assets that we've got, given the infrastructure that we've got, given the properties and the facilities that we've got? Why are that necessary and not being handled in terms of what we have available? Thank you very much for that. At this stage, that'll be all. Thank you.
Okay. No, thank you very much. All right. Colleagues, are there any other questions? Please shout. I think there's a problem.
There's Thabo Mutle. Followed by me.
That my system cannot show me that. Thabo Mutle, and yourself, Mr. Mafanya.
Yes, sir. After Thabo Mutle, thank you.
After Thabo Mutle. Okay, that's fine. In that order, please. Thank you very much, Mr. Mafanya.
Very much, Chairperson, and good morning. I will be still. Good morning to members and colleagues on the
platform. Is it possible to see your video on?
I'm struggling with network, Chair.
That's fine. That's understandable.
That's why I was in and out of the meeting. I'm sorry. Yeah, let me just quickly raise my question before I get cut off. One, I think Honorable Murray has touched on it. It's around the disposals. Can they expatiate on their which category? Because I think there are categories in terms of this disposal. Which ones specifically are they referring to? Or are they referring to all of them? And if they know, by when are they intending to ensure that that is implemented? The second one, Chair, I think is around priorities which relate to budget. But I think they have touched on it. If they can just expatiate as to what is they are with the available budget, what will be for the financial year, their capital budget, as they are silent on the project like your Wufeister, which remains one of their babies. So I think it should come out very clear as to what is their plan in this APP, what will be their plan with regard to Wufeister, if they've got any other project that they want to implement in the near future. What are those projects? Does it mean that after a hotel and the project that they have, they will not have any project going forward around ensuring that the equipments are modified, they are modernized, because that should be a continuous process to avoid a situation where the equipments are obsolete and they are outdated. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mafanya.
Thank you very much, Chair. Let me just check on this system. Yes, what's happening here? Can you hear me, sir?
I can hear you, but I can't see you.
No, I'm visible enough now.
There you are. Yeah.
Thank you very much. Through you, Chair, thank you very much. You know, I concur with Mr. Mare that quite a lot of things are things that we spoke about in the past. And it is a repetition. But now my question is that with the 1.1 billion exit mechanism that has been distributed, I see that almost 25,000 youth between the age of 18 and 34 have been employed. Now my question would be, how many of the older members have already exited the system? Comparatively speaking with the number that has got in. And the concern I have is that the inability to refurbish the defense facilities, they are abhorring. We get shocked all the time. And the inability also to establish organization structure and undertake human resource staff. It boggles the mind also that without those two things that I've alluded to, this is that we're talking about. And it becomes a problem also when you allude to there is a reduction in formal training. You end up having people who are not well equipped to handle very serious matters. So I would like to know now, that in relation to that and considering the budget constraints, because these are some of the things that you cannot do without. They have to be attended to. Then the issue of reducing the number of 73 procurement units, the intention of the DOD is to reduce them to which number? Because a lot of wastage happens in those areas. And what actually has influenced you to come to the decision of reducing them? Had it been that you noticed wastage in those departments, or is there, I will pause this. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Any other comment, colleagues? All right. In the absence of any more hand, let me just raise one or two issues. My focus will be on the status of records review, SECDEF and the team, and that in the report that the AG presented on the 16th of March, it was, you said, your department said that the audit review of the remaining procurement units, by then you had covered only six and you had to deal with the balance, and that the review was to be completed by the end of March 2022. And your report doesn't tell us how far that is, because you'll recall that the concern we have expressed in this committee following the presentation by the AG was that your department was not fully disclosing all irregular expenditure. And that on the basis of that, the department was qualified on the basis of completeness of irregular expenditure. so you then made an undertaking that you will then conduct this audit review in all the procurement units, 73 of them. I hear you that you are now considering reducing them, but we want to know how far you are in terms of completing this exercise. We've noted that you have since disclosed a further amount of about half a billion rand. We appreciate that, but we don't know the full extent of the irregular expenditure that is yet to be disclosed, and what percentage that half a billion rand constitute in terms of the whole population. That's one. And Mr. Abonsi indicated that the irregular expenditure that was not disclosed in the last financial year of 1.53 billion rand is being looked at. And in the report that they will submit to you, they will indicate progress in relation to that. And then two, is the status of investigations into cases now of irregular and fruitless expenditure. We're now talking about the irregular expenditure of about 10.5 billion rand that is disclosed and is in the financial statement or financial statements, as well as the 428 million rand of fruitless and wasteful expenditure. That too is disclosed and in your financial statements. All what was then required was for the department to conduct an investigation into the causes of the irregular expenditure and then say what they are going to do with people who are guilty of committing irregular and irregular, fruitless and wasteful expenditure. But what you reported, SecDef, in the status of records review is that of about 523 cases, you could only 523 cases, you could only report 88 cases. Sorry. Of about 523 cases of irregular expenditure, 300 cases were reported as in progress, that's about 57%. 207 cases, that's 40%, had not started, and only about 16, that's 3%, that had been finalized. So, and then in the cases of fruitless and wasteful expenditure, 88 of them, 24 cases, that's 27%, were reported as in progress. 54, that's 62%, had not started, the investigation had not started. And then 10, that's 11%, 10 cases had been finalized. And the AG also notes that even in cases where investigations were conducted and finalized, the department fails to take disciplinary steps and or recover losses where required. And they are citing examples. The first example is in relation to the asset management contract awarded in 2013. The amount involved is 604 million rand. And the status of investigation at the time of reporting was that the investigation commenced on the 24th of June 2020. The report was finalized in May 2021, that's about a year ago, and handed over to the accounting officer, that's yourself, and the chief of the South African Defence Force for review and decision. And we're not hearing any progress in relation to that. That's, we have interest in knowing what has since become of the findings and recommendations that were made to you, the accounting officer, and the chief of the South African Defence. And the report recommended that action be taken against the named individuals, and that matters be referred to the Special Investigating Unit. And the second one is the inventory verification contract awarded in February 2017. The amounts involved is 660 million. And the internal audit finalized the investigation on the 30th November 2020 and submitted it to yourself, the accounting officer, as well as the chief of the South African Defence Force, for review and to implement the recommendations. So, and then the third one, it's the TLCM report. It's a TLCM contract report. The amounts involved is 293 million rand, and investigation by the Inspector General comments on the 23rd of June 2020. The report was finalized and handed to you yourself, AO, as well as the Chief of the South African Defence Force in June. In June 2021. Now, I'm just citing this amongst the other ones that have been reported here, that investigation was done and findings made, findings and recommendation sent to your office as well as the office of the Chief of the South African Defence Force. Now, our interest is to hear from you progress in relation to what has happened since you have received those findings and the recommendations. And of course, the issues of material irregularities, this one awarded of the inventory, material irregularities, and all of them except the two that you are disputing remain, incomplete in terms of them being, taken to their logical conclusion. Maybe on this one that you are disputing, the PPE not procured in a cost-effective manner. The AG in the report says, on the 14th of April 2020, the department procured 1,000 thermometers at a price of 3,984 rand and 75 cents each, spending a total of 3,984,000 rand. Then they go on to say that the price paid was above the recommended price of 2,727 rand and 86 cent. And they're saying that that was as indicated, that the price, that ruling price of 2,727 rand was issued in the National Treasury instruction on the 19th of March 2020. So if Treasury Institution says this is the price in March, on March 19, 2020, this is the price, 2,727 rand and 86 rand, and on the 14th of April you procure, but at a price much higher than the recommended price, and you still dispute that and say no, you're not aware, the procurement happened before the National Treasury issued the recommended price. So we want to understand the discrepancy. The 19th of March, when the notice was published in the Gazette by National Treasury, setting out the recommended prices, and the date of the 14th of April, when procurement took place, and how, on what basis are you disputing that? And on the fuel one, we're leaving it to you to sort it out with AG, because there is a dispute of facts. In fact, there's no dispute of facts, but you are saying you agree that the delivery was not in terms of the bid specification. However, you're saying that the reason why you could not follow the bid specification to the letter was because of the emergency that happened that required you not to rail fuel by rail, but transport, not to transport fuel by rail, but by road, you know. And now they are saying the bid specification was not followed. And you are not disputing that it was not followed. Instead, you are saying, no, circumstances forced us not to follow the bid specification. Now, but you dispute it and you declare a dispute. But I thought there was a way of resolving, of dealing with issues where an impossibility happens, that you can deviate, but in deviating, application for deviation, I don't know if it is not deviation, maybe something else, but you still must do it within the prescript of the law. The law is not so blind that it will not envisage, it will still be blind to instances where there is an impossibility to perform. But it then says, if there's an impossibility to perform, and you must, this is the process, the procedure that must be followed to then try and still remain within the prescript of the law. I don't hear you, you know, acquitting yourself on that aspect, so that we understand where the dispute is in relation to this particular item. I thought I should just raise those few issues in relation to this sector. And so I now open it up for yourself and the team to respond to all the questions and comments. Over to you, ma'am. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Chair. Maybe let me hand over to the CFO and his team to respond on the other issues, and then I'll also come in later, and then we'll then take the ones that relate to the annual performance plan, Chair, if we can move in that space. Thank you.
thank you very much. Firstly, I will attend the question that was raised by Honourable Member Marais, saying that most of these responses, you find that each year sometimes is repeatable. It depends to the findings, Chair. Let me make an example. The finding of completeness of the asset register. If you notice, that finding was is not only 1 year, it was a multi-year finding, of which we engaged with the internal audit last financial year to deal with that one, to do the audit. Because that exercise is not yet completed, even to the current new year, you will find that we will give an update on the process, how far the internal audit is performing, although it's relating to the previous year work. But because it's not yet finalized, it will be, we will keep on giving the same response, but on the updated fashion. That is what happened. It does not mean that we just give that repeatable answer for the sake of giving. It depends to the situation and to the issue that is on hand. That is where we are in terms of that capacity. Capacity, the other question that was raised by the honourable member, saying that the reprioritization. Chairperson, there are circumstances that you will find that the department is forced to reprioritize. And if we look in terms of the compensation of employees, Chairperson, at no stage where the budget is short on the compensation of employees, but the people need to be paid. Now, the department will be forced to do the compensation, is forced to pay the people, and then now the department will engage itself to make sure that the people work before they get paid. Which other areas that the department can be able to live with if they can take funding from it? And the department will engage itself in terms of the reprioritization and taking into that consideration. As long as it's not going to help the operation of the department, Jefferson. That is what actually happened. You'll find that, let me make another example, Jefferson. Look at what happened to Mozambique. The department did not foresee that that instances will happen. But because our troops are being deployed there, the department needed to find the solution, how they're going to deal with this one. That's why you'll find that the department will engage in the reprioritization in order to honor that commitment, Chairperson. Like what happened in the KZN. The department did not make a provision previously, but because the situation is forcing us to that, we need to reprioritize and look to the situation, how we can to make sure that we attend to that situation. The other one, Chairperson, is in terms of what was raised by the Honorable Moshe. Chairperson, as far as I remember, as I'm sitting here, I really don't remember as a department, we took a decision that there are type of assets that we're going to dispose. And by when it will be disposed. In the PDSC, Chairperson, as far as I remember, there is no firm decision that the department which assets will be disposed, except those normal assets, the redundant, that it might be not used by the department. But at the moment, there is no category that has been specified directly, unless if I missed that report, Chairperson. But so far, that is what I know, Chairperson. In terms of the issue that was raised by the member, Honorable Mafanya, in terms of how far the department, in terms of the exit mechanism. Chairperson, as we all know, that we only received this funding this year, in this current year. Now, HR is in the process to make sure that they are implementing that, because all along we did not have the funding of the exit strategy. So HR is in the process of making sure that they are implementing on that. And Chairperson, I think the other question that was raised in terms of the reduction of the 73 procurement centers. Chairperson, if you look in terms of these procurement centers, it's very, very difficult to manage so many small procurement centers. So the intention is to combine some of these small procurement centers into a bigger one, so that even if we provide the training, if we reduce into 3 to 4 big procurement centers, it will be easy for the department to provide the training into the big number of people. Like we were talking about the National School of Government. Chairperson, the department, if the National School of Government provides the training to the bigger body, it will make it will have a value for money. Now, if you look to the procurement center, they only got about 5 people. Now, there is a cost related to go and train 5 people. Probably the cost might even exceed the benefit. But if you combine them, it would make a value. It's not that the department will just do his wife. We will be able to make sure that we do the full research and combine them. That is where we are, Chairperson. I think the other question, I will leave it to my colleagues to deal with it and then take it from there.
Thank you, Chair and members. Chair, there was a question from Honorable Mare with regard to have we learned from the lessons of the EcoPackage process expenditure. Yes, Chair, we have learned from that, and once we finalize the implementation of the consequence management, we will ensure from now going forward, all leases that we enter into other departments, we are ensuring that we follow proper procurement processes, we go through the National Army, we go through public works, and ensure that we do it in terms of the law, and we do not incur any fruitless expenditure or irregular expenditure. And we will manage that for every lease that we enter into going forward. The St. George's was not part of our presentation, but I think when we do finally respond to the members and we do a presentation on any other concerns you may have, we will give you full details of that. But currently, we haven't incurred any irregularity of the expenditure pertaining to any other lease agreements. Then, Honorable Chair, you did raise questions about how far are we with regard to the remaining procurement units that the internal audit is investigating. Chair, when the internal audit division started this investigation, it was somewhere in October last year, October 2021. And the request was for them, together with the auditors, to audit over the last 3 financial years. So it's a lot of work, considering the internal audit division has led them 30 auditors. So we are sending these auditors to 73 procurement units to audit over the last 3 financial years. So it's quite a lot of work because it's just not them selecting samples, but to audit 100% of every transaction within those procurement units. So unfortunately, they will not be able to finalize. We thought they would be able to, but with less than 30 auditors over 3 financial years, 73 procurement units, we will not be able to finish the investigation before the end of this financial year, which has just passed, but for us to, by the time we finalize the financial statements, we will not. So what we will do with the external auditors, the AG auditors, we will share, because we are having constant discussions with them. We will obviously share with them the methodology that we're following, the method that we're following in terms of auditing those procurement processes. And if they are happy with the process that we follow and we're able to disclose 100% of the additional irregular expenditure identified, and they are happy with the process with all supporting documentation, then at least from a control point of view, they will be comfortable with the process that we follow, and we should be able to at least deal with the qualification. But it's important that from our side, we document all processes and account for every additional amount that we have identified and ensure that this is recorded in all our registers. Then we'll be able to deal with that. But unfortunately, we'll not be able to finalize that irregularity, the full completeness before we issue the financial statement on the 31st of May. You also raised the issue of the 1.5 billion irregular expenditure that the AG raised with you about not disclosing our books. That was part of the TUSANA contract, it was part of the PPE, the 273 million or so of the PPE, which was part of the SIU report. We have disclosed all that. Where we do not agree with them, we're in discussions with them, but at least the TUSANA is recorded, is recorded in our books. The PPE that was part of the SIU investigation is also recorded in our books. So we have addressed a bulk of the 1.5 billion additional that the AG picked up as an indicator we haven't recorded in our books. Then you also raised the issue of how far we, in terms of investigations into the irregular expenditure of 10.5 billion. The 10.5 billion, 7.5 billion of that relates to the compensation of a piece of employment, the underfunding imposed by National Treasury
on the compensation of employees. Yes, we do acknowledge that there is 3 billion extra, which is related to supply chain management. But those six cases that you did mention in terms of the asset contract from 2013, the TLTM contract, the inventory management contract, 90% of those 6-7 cases that the AG shared with you in a special record review pertain to the additional 3 billion that relates to the supply chain management. So those are the ones that are under investigation and the presence of Institute for Sports Management. But I think the sector in general will deal in general with regards to where are we when it comes to consequence management in the department. And I think we did present to you in the past with regard to her writing to the Chiefs of Service and Divisions, requesting them to finalize the investigations. We also did indicate that at every accountability management committee meeting, which is held monthly, we do deal with status of investigations. And then we also shared with you the concerns that we have in terms of the Defence Act, which limits her in terms of what she can do. But she has obviously also escalated the concerns and challenges that she has to the executive authority, the minister. But I think the sector will expand on that to just give you a better status of where are we in terms of consequence management. Thank you, Chair.
Jefferson, thank you very much. I will hand over to Mr. Cox to respond on the ATP issue.
Chair, thank you very much. Chair, there were a number of questions raised by the Honourable Member Mare, so maybe my response would be slightly different in responding to him. The question from Honourable Member Mare is the goals and tasks that are presented in the APP. Chair, the review is clear on the goals and tasks that Defence is expected to execute. 4 goals and 13 tasks. But Chair, at the beginning of the presentation, we indicated that when the review was conceptualized, it was against a backdrop of 1.8%. The same 4 goals and the same 13 tasks are still expected of Defence against a budget of 0.7%. And this is exactly where the problem lies. We are continually expected to continue to perform at the same level as expected at the Defence Review publication in 2015 within a much limited budget allocation. So the question was, are the 4 goals and 13 tasks a hierarchy? No, these are the expectations placed on the department, whether it's defending and protecting South Africa, safeguarding our borders, promoting peace and stability, and supporting the developmental agenda of government. These all remain relevant. So, Chair, this is not a hierarchy. This is a full requirement of what Defence must do. And I think we've had this discussion at multiple PTDs where we've said this is unsustainable. We cannot sustain this current level of ambition against the current budget allocation. And I think many times we've been excited and spoken about revising a level of ambition and having work sessions with the PCD to establish what can be achieved. And I think, Chair, on behalf of the Secretary, the Chief and the Minister, I think we are very close as a department to engaging with one another and saying, let's be realistic, what can we achieve? And Chair, we've just spoken about the OE implications as well. Even though the APP has been built, we still have to find 3.2 billion in years to fund the COE. The implications are that the APP targets may not be realized, because while we are trying to execute goals and activities or tasks, we have a COE that we must also deal with. So, Chair, until you have established an affordable level of ambition that is funded, we will continue to have these questions. And the questions are valid. And Honourable Member Mare is right. We are robbing Peter to pay Paul. We do this every year. So as the requirements arise, when there's a deployment, we shift money from one program to another program, and so we shift funds all year long. But Chair, these are the realities. The sustainable long-term trajectory will inform you, Chair, what are your support requirements and what prime vision equipment is required to support that long-term strategy. I mentioned in the beginning, we don't have that strategy in place yet. Our long-term vision, we are still contemplating what we think a future trajectory will look like. What will it cost? That will allow us to begin engagement. Chair, those are the hard facts. And I spoke about the system, the IDES system, the ICT systems. All of this is your support elements. But you have to understand what it is you want to achieve. So the question is, do we keep the four goals, 30 targets? Do we support the MTF priorities of government? Do we continue to deploy? Do we continue to fund OE? These are all the questions we have. Chair, you'll remember as well that the defense review had a HR operating and capital ratio of 40-30-30. You are well aware we are far off this ratio and HR is consuming in excess of 63%. That just shows you what's left in operating and capital, yet the expectation is we must continue to perform. And I think, Chair, what is happening, we are too thinly spread. We cannot afford to support our prime mission equipment and the mandate of defense. So yes, we will be shifting money backwards and forwards. We'll be reacting as the situation arises. But until we have a more firm base, Chair, this will be the situation. So the ABP in front of you, Chair, is what is funded partially because we must still remove another 3 million from the ABP and what we can do within the mandate of every program that is within the defense portfolio. So, Chair, I can attempt to answer all the questions of the members, but until we've addressed this strategic issue, all these questions become irrelevant because we need to establish that long-term trajectory that we have. Chair, I'm not sure if I've responded or if I should elaborate more.
No, you have tried.
Thank you, Mr.
So I will see you until 10 minutes until half past on this subject, okay. And we close the next item.
Thank you very much, Chair. Let me start, Chair, with the issues that has been raised by Honorable Mabe, but also to front-load the issue of the cries we have made to our portfolio committee in terms of the budget cuts. And we know why we find ourselves there, because even in the presentation, it tells you that economically we are not doing well as a country. And as a result, everybody's budget is cut. But the operation of the department happens in the context where the budget cuts are increasing. And then also we find that there is an increase in the tasking to the department. So it makes it a little bit difficult. But what these budget cuts do, Chairperson, is that until we get the money, everything remains indicative. So that means that we are not able as a department also to do long-term planning. And we have been before this portfolio committee to tell about the issues, how we are even struggling from the issues of the spares, the issues of the maintenance and things like that. And we have had specific discussions in particular in relation to our efforts for argument's sake. So I think, Chairperson, as it is clearly mentioned, when the Defence Review of 2015 was conceptualized, the idea was to arrest the decline and then also to rejuvenate the defense force, the military, through the absorption of the new soldiers. And this has not really gone according to plan, and simply because then there hasn't been money to actually implement the outcome of the defense review. What has happened in the meantime, which is 7 years down the line, with the budget having continued on an ongoing basis to decline, is that we find ourselves with even a worse situation when it comes to our own capabilities. And I think that maybe it's a presentation for another day if we can talk about what happens actually in the countries where we have deployed. I would like to go through that. But also, Chairperson, Let me respond to the question by Honorable Mabe. He is asking us around the priorities that we have put down, and also to say charity begins at home. But I must say that I agree with those sentiments expressed, that yes, charity begins at home. And that's why when we are called upon to do certain things, we react to them, regardless of whether the money is there, is sufficient or not. And that is evidenced by how we responded when the July unrest broke out, how we are now responding as I speak, that we have deployed our soldiers in the KZN area to deal with all these things. However, Chairperson, we cannot say that we should remain unmoved as a country when we look at what is happening in the countries that surround us. We are a member of SADC, and we cannot sit when things go wrong in one of them, and particularly where there are also certain interests of the our country in the stability of that country. We know the threats that are posed by terrorism, and if we don't deal with it, then the likelihood of spreading out throughout the region is very high. And we have seen it happen on other parts of the continent. So I don't think that we can pick and choose and say, where do we deploy? Now, there was a question also that was asked to say, where does this money come from? You would recall, Chair, that when we knew that we are going to deploy, as per the request of SADC and direction by head of state, that we needed to deploy in Mozambique, there was money that was set aside by National Treasury. At the end, that time we didn't anticipate that we are going to have the July unrest. So whatever was earmarked to be used for Operation Gigella, it had to be split between Operation Gigella and Operation Prosper within the country. And at certain stage, we had to dig into the budget of Joint Ops to make sure that we are able to keep Gigella going. So these constant shortfalls, they do have an impact. But what we were trying to do, Chairperson, remember this is our annual performance plan. We cannot load everything into a performance plan. We are giving you a sense of where we stand. So some of the questions, for instance, like who's a step, what is happening, the next. Chairperson, we have long taken a decision as a department that we were not going to put in more money into HFS, and that instruction went to AMCO because, Chairperson, we saw that the situation of Dinel was deteriorating, and at one stage, Chairperson, in passing, just when I started, we were sitting with a finding from the AG to say that we had gone into Wuhan to rescue our people, and we were then now finding a count against us to say that why did we use SAA, because SAA was not tax compliant. You know the presentations that have been made before the portfolio committee, what they are saying, and we don't think that, because part of the reason that we are not going to put more money, because it is evident that they will not be able to actually finish the project, because even availability of money doesn't equal to us going to be able to finish. And the money that was put was not even in any way intended to restart the production processes. So we know that if we were to put money, we will not get what we want out of it, and hence the decision that we have taken. On the issue of the optioning, Chair, I think that this is an issue that has been looked at not only by ourselves, but also within AMCO. But also there was a decision that maybe we needed to wait and then have much more thorough discussions around it. Because I think that when Honorable Marae raised the matter, he was raising it within the context to say, why don't you stretch some of our assets to raise money, which money we can then channel and send and use it to deal with the shortfall. However, Chairperson, on the other hand, we have these reinvestments that we get from the UN. And when the money comes, it goes to National Treasury. probably what we should be fighting for is to say, can that money not then be rechanneled to the department to see what it is that we can do? Chairperson, we plan for our leases. We have come before the portfolio committee and told you that at least per annum we spend about 850 million rand in leases. So it is important that as a department we plan long term. Where do we want to be? We are sitting here in AMCO, we pay the rent here in AMCO, and also some of our facilities are not in good shape. So we need to look at this as a package. And in a year or two, we'll find ourselves having exceeded a billion out of leases. So it is a wise decision that we actually, with the land available, build our own facilities where we can deal with that. I know that there was the issue of hotel that...
1 minute left.
Okay. With the issue of some of the issues of the leases and plans, I can tell you for sure, Chairperson, that it was discussed even at the COD, and the Chief of the Defence Force is acting on some of the things. And then I think that we probably would find time to come back to you on that. Chairperson, on the issue of that was raised by Honourable Makwanya, we stand at 36% in terms of our youth, and the Minister has expressed that with this number, we need to deliver on it until we reach 40%. Now, we did receive at the beginning of the financial year 1 billion that we have to use for the military exit mechanism, and that is for our colleagues in uniform. And the one that we are going to get in the following financial year is going to be 800 million. So in total, we have been given 1.8 billion, but only 1 billion has been committed right now, and that is, the plan is underway to actually implement on that and make sure that we also create space for the absorption of young people. Chairperson, let me in a minute that is left talk about the issues of this irregular expenditure. We have done, at least, let me say, I have done what I could do as an accounting officer as expected of me by the PSMA. And I think the PSMA does also provide that when all avenues have been explored and there isn't much progress, then the issue needs to be escalated to the executive authority. I have escalated not once or twice with the previous executive authority, and we have escalated again on this one. Let me also say, Chairperson, I have worked also very closely with the Adjutant General, where we have, even you would recall, that the SDM, the Asset Management, as well as the ECOPAC, we investigated it ourselves. We came up with the names. The letters were drafted to those colleagues that are supposed to be held accountable. And the letters were delivered to the chief, and that is where they are sitting, and I think that is the matter that they are addressing. On some of the things, on the PPE and fuel, I wouldn't say much, but you were also talking about investigations that have been conducted by the SIU. I can state, Chairperson, right now to say that at least we have now some of the evidence leaders that have been made available to us. Actually, we got the information yesterday, and they promised that we'll also get those of the presiding officers, and we will be ready to move with that. But as the minister has committed, the issues of doing much more around the issues of consequence management, they are receiving the requisite attention. Thank you very much, Chairman.
Thank you very much, SecDef. Okay, I think we should leave it at that. And then say that on the issues of irregular expenditure, as well as the material irregularities, we will have set another day where we just drill into those matters in detail. I should confirm, SecDef, that we've received this register of all irregular expenditure or expenditures. Irregular expenditure from the department. I hope it's a total of 580 something cases, as it were. So we will then be dealing with each one of them at the right time. One, to check where are you in terms of applying a consequence management in each one of them. And where there are delay in investigation, we'll ask you to give us reasons why there is a delay, especially some of the cases date as way back as 2016 and 2017 and 2018, but they're still reported as matters and are still under investigation. On the other issues that you colleagues have raised on the APP, you've dealt with all of them. Of course, we will be following up on them during the course of the in-year monitoring of the budget. And I think we should support you in saying that we would not get any more money, and what you have, what you see is what you have, and that we need to work within the resource envelope given to the department, in which then will require you to revise your ambitions and to remain within the allocated budget, to avoid all the budget overruns, as it were. And so on that, I think we should thank you as SecDef for the SecDef and the team for the presentation this evening. And I now want to quickly move to the AMSCO.
Chairperson, just with your
Mr. Mare, I really don't have time. I'm sorry. Okay. I really do not have time.
So can I just ask if there are follow-ups on what has been said? How do we deal with that? That is
Let's find time during the in-year monitoring. We can find a slot sometime during the course of even in this quarter to deal with the outstanding issues. We should close at 1, and we're 24 minutes to 1, and we had to receive another presentation.
Okay. Very frustrating, but yeah, I accept your ruling.
No, it's true. Very frustrating. I think we should try and prioritize questions and limit ourselves so that we are able to come back with follow-ups. All right, so let me welcome the chairman of the board, Dr. Dexter, the deputy chair, and the other board members present, Ambassador Ndlovu, Dr. Lubisi, Mr. Matenche, Ms. Kweya Gushu, Mr. Sugazi, and Ms. Mashinini, and of course the CEO and the CFO, plus all other executives present in the meeting. And Dr. Dexter, over to you, sir, just for your opening comments, and decide what you want to do, whether you do the presentation yourself or you ask the CEO to take us through. Over to you, sir.
Chair?
Yes, sir, Mr. Mathieu.
Chair, I'm just curious. You have not mentioned the deputy chair of the board. Where is he?
I did, Mr. Motimele. He's in the meeting. My apologies if I did not mention his name. Over to you, Chair, Dr. Dexter. Advocate, are you trying to...
Yes, just to indicate to Mr. Mutle's question, Mr. Mutimele, by virtue of his 3-year term having lapsed by the end of April, as such, he's no longer appointed.
Oh, okay. It's fallen by the wayside. Okay. Okay. Over to you, Tim. Chair. Okay, let me invite you, Advocate Mbata. I don't know.
Thank you, Chair. Members of the Portfolio Committee, colleagues, and our board members who have joined us. Good afternoon. Chair, I'm not so sure how much time are you allocating to our presentation in the interest of time, but notwithstanding that, Chair, I will try to run the presentation quite, you know, pacey, so as to save time. And if at any stage, Chair, I'm moving too fast, members, Chair, in fact, you indicate as such.
We indicate, correct.
Chair, I must say, our corporate plan is informed by what we are foreseeing moving ahead, but it also, you know, we have made certain assumptions, but we continue to observe, Chair, that the landscape is forever changing, precisely because of the, you know, the lack of funding for maintenance and other related, you know, projects that we needed to execute. As such, it becomes difficult to focus in terms of what is, you know, likely to happen in the horizon. But notwithstanding that, Chair, we are working very closely with our colleagues from the DOD, SecDev, chiefs of services, and many other colleagues from the DOD. And we continue to take guidance and change our plan as we move forward. Obviously, Chair, we are mindful of the deployments and the other operations that they are involved in, which will either require certain systems and support services. So we do actually alter our plans to actually accommodate our main client, Chair. I thought I would just mention, Chair. Of course, Chair, the budget is really trying to ensure that, you know, we remain as a going concern. We make sure that we address the issues of or the objectives of the organization, and in terms of our mandate. Key to it, Chair, we are a technology institution that provides a service to our clients, and as such, Chair, critical to it is a human capital element. So as to ensure that at all material times, we do actually have the capability that is so required, whether is in terms of the procurement, or is in terms of the R&D, research and development, and the acquisition, you know, projects. So, Chair, with that said, this budget seeks to ensure that we maintain that balance. If I may, Chair, over the last 6 years or so, upon realizing that the budget cuts are a norm, and we continue to see the decline, we then, with the, you know, leadership of the then board, went on a strategy session where we then realized that we needed to review our strategy to respond to some of these threats. And as such, Chair, these corporate goals and objectives are actually a testimony to that. And we have seen that had we not have, you know, some of the objectives that we had identified for ourselves, like the revenue generation, Chair, would have been exposed, because there were some financial years where we received, the National Treasury reduced our budgets quite extensively, and we were able to cushion some of those shortfalls because we had taken these drastic measures, Chair. Moving on, Chair, just to recap, our mandate is as stipulated But just to mention, Chair, that we are a Schedule 2 entity, that in terms of the PFMA, we are, you know, regulated by the regulation issued in terms of the PFMA and the Companies Act, Chair. The Minister of Defense and Military Veterans is the sole shareholder of AMSCO. The Board of Directors is the accounting authority of AMSCO. And our mandate, Chair, is to meet the following requirements. That is to, and as we do that, we do so in an effective, efficient, and economic way, to acquire the defense material on behalf of the DoD. But of course, Chair, with the dwindling budget, we are seeing less and less, you know, acquisition projects. But we hope then, Chair, that those projects that are currently deferred are not to say that they are permanently deferred, because they are actually necessary to ensure that we remain, you know, competitive in the battle space. We manage the AMSCO dockyard as a strategic facility to provide SA Navy with third and fourth maintenance and refit. We manage the strategic facilities, that is the R&D portfolio, some of them your visitor, Chair, and we provide defense technology, research and development, analysis and test and evaluation requirements of the DoD. We adhere, Chair, to accepted principles of corporate governance. We always strive to, you know, to attain clean audit outcomes, but it's always not that easy. AMSCO may also provide, Chair, such service to other departments or government agencies on a regulated basis. What that means, Chair, is that AMSCO may enter into commercial activity subject to the approval by our Minister of Defense and Military Veterans. We are beginning to see an uptake in such endeavors, Chair. Currently, we are doing work, you know, for the police, and we are seeing that, you know, the requirements are on an upward spiral. As we speak today, one of my executives is having meetings with our counterparts in the police. Correctional Services, Chair, we entered into an agreement with ATNS, where we are actually their preferred program management service provider. And we hope those relationships will continue to grow, Chair. At a glance, Chair, that is how we are related to the DoD. I will not spend time. Chair, this is our strategic overview. This is our strategic hierarchy, Chair. Of course, Chair, it's informed by at the onset, we consider the government priorities and translate the DoD, the minister's priorities, and thereafter, Chair, we will then look into our vision, mission, how we attain those objectives, and we will set our specific, you know, strategic outputs. And in this instance, Chair, it's our revenue generation, as I've indicated, cost management, where we say, you know, we need to be, you know, frugal in terms of how we manage costs, because every penny counts, Chair. We need to ensure that, Chair, for us to have a happy and a smiling client, we need to be efficient in the delivery, both internally, so that we are, you know, acting with speed, agility internally, but making sure that there is not a lot of going around, you know, and we get straight to the point and make those critical decisions. But of course, Chair, as we do that, we would like to know what is our client or our stakeholders think of us. And there's a whole beneath that, the goals that we set ourselves and indicators that then will determine whether we're on the right track, Chair. Chair, I will not, I will move on. Suffice to say that as part of that, we will do the situational analysis, you know, what is the threat space, the environmental scan, and of course, critical to that is ensure that we remain sovereign in terms of these capabilities, Chair. Moving on, Chair, I think all I wanted to touch at the bottom is some of the key government policies that we will then form our thinking as we develop these strategic goals, Chair. critically, Chair, from an external point of view, we are quite aware that now, Chair, because of these budget cuts, we need to work smarter, we need to think out of the box. We've been having a number of engagements right up to the COD, where this topic was discussed extensively, and we were given clear, you know, objectives to say we need to reduce the cost of procurement. We need to ensure that the cost of maintenance and how we support SANDF, you know, takes into account the shrinking budgets, where possible, the manufacturing of some of the generic spares, looking at our internal capabilities, where possible, where feasible. And in fact, we are expected to come up with a plan to say, to what extent can we come up, you know, with a model or a plan that begins to look into those aspects. Chair, moving on, it's just a translation of these strategic outputs into goals and what sort of tools that we are using, as well as the outcomes that we expect. If you look at the revenue generation, Chair, we are saying generate additional income will be the goal, and then we will set those goals for R&D, for corporate, for various other departments, and then we will review on an ongoing basis our performance against those goals, and then what are the main tools where we are saying these are the opportunities that we need to go and utilize internally our resources. So we will look at issues of leveraging on our strengths, where we sell our services, like I've indicated, to various other government departments. We look in terms of how we sweat our assets, where we can make sure that it adds up towards sustainability, the commercialization of IP. This really, Chair, we're not commercializing your sovereign, you know, IP or strategic IP. We are saying where we have found dual use capabilities or potential to a civilian environment. So we then translate using some of the building blocks that we've derived from this strategic IP. So there is no risk of exposing ourselves. And of course, Chair, we try to diversify our clients. I mean, as we speak, for Gerotech, our main client outside of the defense space, Chair, is the Department of Transport in Gauteng, and we continue to come up with solutions to resolve some of the challenges that they are facing, whether is it in the vehicle testing space where there's a lot of corruption. So we are the preferred service provider, and we continue. And I think, Chair, by the way, they've received your report after your visit, and they've indicated that they take note of the suggestions and comments that you've made. And we will be having follow-up meetings. Chair, I thought I would highlight, I think it's self-explanatory, and as we go further, we'll see how this talks also to the SLA that we have signed with the SECDEF in terms of how they will measure us, especially around efficient and effective delivery for the main client. As I've said, Chair, those are the six main goals that we are being measured on by the client environment. We've got a clear framework. We've got monthly, engagements with DMD where they are tracking our performance. Initially, it was quarterly. They've requested that, say, sometimes it's too late, after a quarter. So let's try and meet more frequently so as to ensure that the aim is to try and resolve issues before they escalate, Chair. Chair, if you look at the under scheduled order placement, the 90 days for shortened process for commercially off-the-shelf items, I know there was a concern identified by the researchers, Chair. Chair, all I can say that we have sort of built, some of the inefficiencies that we encounter. For an example, when we advertise, we find that some of the companies will come and say, please, can you give us an extension so that we are able to prepare ourselves? Sometimes the requirements are not so clear from DOD. We'll then have to go back and clarify these requirements. At times, Chair, where we contract Denel and Denel subcontracts the companies. So those subcontracted companies will come and seek clarities and so on. But, Chair, it can be reduced because we just need to make to work much more efficient. If we work very closely with the client, we plan together these frequent engagements to anticipate and make sure that we deal with all these issues. It's doable, Chair, I'm sure next year's plan will reflect a reduced period. Chair, I will not touch on others. Suffice to say, if you look at our corporate plan on page 49 to page 63, we address all these goals quite in detail and what sort of indicators are we looking and how do we measure ourselves to arrive at a point where we say either we perform or not perform. And of course, AG will come at the end just to measure whether what we are saying or what we say is our score is indeed the true, you know, picture. Chair, just to indicate in the next slide to say we are amongst the only acquisition agency or the only country that is having an agency like AMSCO. And many other countries have come to us and really, you know, were impressed in the manner in which we go around with acquisition, because this chair guarantees, you know, the survivability and the sustainability of some of these systems, you know, other than just buying the system over the counter, only to realize that you can't, you know, it's not the quality you require or it's not supportable. And that's all we are saying. There is a scope, you know, for such services as indicated there. And we begin with to sell this concept to other, even internally, to other government departments and agencies. Moving on, Chair, we then come to our strategic facilities, Chair. I will not spend quite a lot of time. I think members of the portfolio committee are quite familiar. Recently, you visited these three facilities. Suffice to say, Protechnic is our, you know, capability to detect, trace amounts of hazardous chemicals or biological agents on the prohibition side. Ergotech is an economics one-stop shop solution for the DOD. Chair, I think if I were to mention, you have raised the issue of boots or appropriate shoe for the soldiers. We've reflected on that, Chair. All we could see currently, the work that is, you know, undergoing there, Chair, is between SAMS and Ergotech, but they are doing more the analysis, you know, trying to look at the database that they have and trying to analyze what could be the appropriate issue. But we are saying perhaps we need to take this as a technical project where we then go out there and do a full research in terms of, you know, the global, you know, assessment, what is available, looking at, you know, your medical journals, looking at journals, people who deal with sort of material, and be able to say, you know, let's benchmark also and come up with our own. So we will, you know, create a small research team that will look at that, and with the hope that we can speed it up and be able to come up to an acceptable solution. It could mean that we will then have to invest a little bit of money to actually go out there and see what is available in the international space. So that's what Professor Mkaza, you know, 2 days ago, you know, was quite excited, I must say, Chair, that he thinks also that, you know, that is the right way of approaching it. But we're not going to be working in competition with SAMS. We have a very good relationship with SAMS in the form of General Curry. We will work jointly to find that solution. Thank you, Chair. Chair, moving on, we've got Gerotech test facilities, a vehicle test facility. You have visited that facility. Parque Fontaine, an antenna test range. Alcanpan is an artillery test range, Chair, in the Northern Cape. Institute for Maritime Technology, where they do under and above the waters, you know, research for the SA Navy, Chair. I must say, Chair, some of the dual use capabilities that we continue to market worldwide came out of the research that we did for the Navy, and it's finding a civilian application. Chair, these are some of the other functions that are lying in the space of R&D, the team that works on IP, the team that works on technology development. Big scope, Chair, for youngsters there to explore. You have seen Flamingo, they did a demonstration at Gerotech, smart young people who do some amazing you know, staff for the artillery space, for all other arms of services, Chair. And that area, Chair, it's got an opportunity to bring all these innovative, outstanding youngsters to come and explore. But of course, that will also require funding, Chair. So hence, it's important to generate some of these additional revenue, so as to ensure that we are able to create that space for the youth. Moving on, Chair, to the dockyard, Chair. As I've indicated, they do the planned, they are expected to do planned preventative maintenance, corrective maintenance, reconstruction and repairs, upgrades and modernization. Chair, again, because of the shrinking budgets, you know, you'll find that the planned maintenance gets affected. Suffice to say, Chair, we've been directed to say, let us look at what we can do, especially at the dockyard. They've got, you know, such a capability where we can start to manufacture components and parts for weather vehicles and vessels and for many other applications. So we are investigating that, Chair. All, Chair, the next slide we are indicating, it started where a Board of Arms Corps and South African Navy agreed to say, let's have this renewal program, which, Chair, we have started to, you know, get in new equipment, making sure that training facilities are attended to. However, Chair, key to it now is to ensure that the dockyard continues now to expand in terms of its scope, making sure that the equipment that we brought in there is beneficial to the client environment, whether Navy, I think there's a scope for the Army as well. But, Chair, we are exploring those. The COD gave us a task to come back with a clear plan. So we are in consultations with other arms of services, and then at that space, acquisition will go and report back. Chair, I will not spend time with this, just to, you know, expand on our services. Chair, the next one, it was also raised there to say, about 3 years ago, we came and we came up with this great plan in terms of sweating the assets. All, Chair, what I want to indicate here, that effort, Chair, there was a preferred bidder, but the validity of that contract, unfortunately, expired. We are back in the drawing board. We'll be stakeholders in terms of those, Chair. But, Chair, I must say, because of the aging of our workforce, we are seeing, you know, younger people moving in there. But the risk there, Chair, is that if you don't have active projects that are underway, you know, we need to find, you know, alternative ways of saying how then do we make sure that the learning continues to be transferred to the youth. And there are a number of various ways. We are looking at potentially deploying some of these youngsters, you know, to assist, you know, in areas like the other arms of services, to really, whether it's maintenance work, just to get their hands dirty. Yes, they've got the knowledge, you know, academic knowledge. Yes, but that experience, Chair, has to be nurtured. You know, we've been talking with Denel to say at a point when things are picking up, we are even prepared to deploy some of these resources there, because the last thing you'll do to an engineer, you know, is to keep the engineer in an office and where the learning is not taking place. And some of them, Chair, will find specialized training, whether locally or abroad, to make sure that whilst now we are in this dip, Chair, but, you know, we are preparing for in the event where there's a, you know, uptake in terms of the acquisition projects. Chair, I think just here is to depict some of the learning and development that has been taking place. On the left, you will see, Chair, I will not go through, you know, each and every one. I think it's self-explanatory and straightforward. Chair, just to indicate some of the, you know, the technical, you know, skills that we have, we try, you know, but we can even go and zoom in. You know, if you look at the purple graph, we can then zoom in and say to those BSCs, you know, what sort of capabilities are they at Protechnic? How long have they been at Protechnic? What are they doing? Their years of service. We do have all that data, Chair. Same as if you go towards your right. Chair, this excludes the artisan component that is at a dockyard, which is in a region at any given time. We have about 300 or so artisans. So all you are saying, Chair, this is, you know, the core, you know, technical competency that we need to make sure that we keep it active, we keep them busy, or otherwise they start to look outside. Chair, this is just the demographics of our staff. As you can see, you know, from ethnic breakdown, Chair, I will not go there again. Those lines are telling the story, as well as the next line graph, Chair. Chair, these are some of the projects that we have. In the main, these are, we try and support, you know, high school students who are doing STEM subjects in terms of the, you know, science and maths, and make sure that we give them the extra, you know, lessons to make sure that, you know, they improve their results, Chair. Moving on, Chair, under financial overview, financing of AMSCO, Chair, is mainly through income appropriated by Parliament and received via the DOD, which consists of an allocation and payment for services rendered to the DOD. So transfer payment, Chair, is to a tune of 82%, and the rest, you know, is either, you know, the additional commercial work that we are doing, investment income and money in the bank, that actually, you know, accrues interest. And all those pots of money, Chair, helps to sustain and making sure that we can continue to sustain the capability on behalf of the Department of Defense, Chair. The personnel costs, Chair, they are going down nicely, Chair. We would like to see ourselves, I think our target, if we can be in a region between 60% and 65%, we will then say, you know, we look on par with the rest of the industry. Chair, this is a deficit position, but the comforting factor, Chair, why we are at 16 million in red was mainly because of the, you know, the late funding that we received. We received it in here for the R&D allocation from the DOD. I think we received in excess of about 60, you know, is a provision for this in here. So at least if you then you do the maths, you minus 60 from the 16, we will be, you know, cash positive, Chair. Chair, I will move on quickly to the next slide, Chair, just to indicate, Chair, I think it's an illustration now and a breakdown of how we got into that 16 million deficit, Chair. But I would like to zoom in, Chair. I know there was an issue raised by the research team around external services, Chair, as to why it's such a high, you know, a steep increase from the previous year, Chair. That external services, Chair, takes into account the refurbishment program that is underway at AMSCO/DOD headquarters, where, Chair, that was the money that we received from Public Works, and they had put conditions to say, you know, upgrade the facility, because, Chair, since it's a construction in the 80s, we have never really had any, you know, a refurbishment program for this facility, Chair. We are decommissioning the entire air conditioning system. In fact, that air conditioning system, Chair, you know, is no longer even available in the marketplace. So we are commissioning a new air conditioning system, new lifts, the fire detection system will be installed. You know, there will be quite a lot of, you know, even as far as, you know, removing the existing carpets, putting new floors and so on. So it's quite, you know, messy at the moment, but I think once we finish this refurbishment, you know, it will look like a state of the art and a building that we can all be proud of. Advertising, Chair, there was a spike there as well. It's mainly the provision and our contribution as a partner, you know, for the AAD, upcoming AAD exhibition and show in September 21st to the 25th of September, Chair. We hope to see, you know, the portfolio committee there as well, Chair. Chair, the other, you know, cost there has to do with the IT equipment replacement, Chair. I think the benchmark, the industry benchmark is to say every 7 to 8 years, you need to replace your IT equipment because it starts picking up obsolescence and then, you know, there are breakdowns, disruptions, and the cost actually effectively, you know, increases because, I mean, you always get the latest, you know, cheaper, you know, IT solution, especially in the IT space. The obsolescence and the redundancy is quite more frequent. So we went out on a replacement program, Chair, where we were replacing all those laptops and the IT equipment, because we're going to realize, Chair, you know, we had so many different brands that were also becoming to be an issue. We have standardized. So we hope that in the next outer years, the cost will come down nicely, Chair. Chair, moving on. Like I've articulated the challenges, Chair, I will not attempt to repeat it. That suffice to say, Chair, a significant shortfall, which is the last bullet, is experiencing the post-medical liability. As you are aware, Chair, we took over the dockyard in 2007. Those employees are on a government scheme, which is GEMS. And then they were transferred to them, and that was a condition of we could not, you know, attempt to change those the medical aid per se. I think that was a condition of the transfer agreement. But having said that, Chair, most of them have since left and joined other medical aid schemes that we are offering. But these ones, because there is a post-medical retirement benefit, so that's why they are there. This is the provision to say when they retire, they will still be covered for medical aid purposes, Chair. Moving on, Chair, the graph there, Chair, depicts to say we are explaining the shortfall in the current FinEar, and of course we hope that in the outer years that will be rectified and will continue to operate in a surplus position. Chair, I will now deal with the what is mainly different from your presentation. All I just added was the finding, so that we can cross-reference with what we have done about it. I think the first finding, Chair, had to deal with the misstatements, which was the main issue why we could not get clean audits. So far, Chair, we've got a year-end plan that was distributed to various financial divisions to ensure that sufficient time for review of final information or of information prepared as we do not have the ERP solution, Chair. And I know CFO is managing it tightly at every expo. He reports every 2 weeks. He reports, you know, on the progress on this matter, so as to deal with that. So we have implemented that action, Chair. The next one, to deal with where the AG, you know, found that the standard operating procedure to document roles and responsibility was not in place. We have finalized that, Chair. Moving on, Chair, on the next page, procurement and contract management findings. You know, as per the two quarterly progress report in the procurement plan, numerous items were not achieved. Procurement plan targets not achieved may result in the strategic objective. Those were the views of the AG to say contract register not updated. Chair, all I can report, the execution of procurement plans is monitored by EXCO. We've got a delegated official authorizing, you know, the amendments. So we've got a clear process now that we've put in place, managed by Mr. Tefu. And Chair, I indicated to the AG to say one of the areas that we're trying to strengthen is the capacity and the capability of the supply chain team. So how we are going about it, we have sourced a supplier to evaluate the whole supply chain management process, philosophy, policies, do a skills audit, and then recommend, you know, a new, whether it's a new org structure, you recommend changes that must be effected, because at times, Chair, we tend to become too onerous to ourselves, and as such, it slows us in responding appropriately to the client environment. Even our audit and risk committee had expressed concerns around the time it takes to, you know, what we regard as less complex, you know, procurement. Compliance measurement findings, Chair, that relates to where we had incurred irregular expenditure in the current year due to not following SCM processes, Chair. Policy is not timely updated, Chair. What our action there, Chair, is a training on applications of single source, sole source suppliers to prevent irregular expenditure. There are dates in place. There's a plan to, you know, when that training will be taking place. Updating of management documents. We are monitoring that. Audit and Risk Committee is monitoring that. Chair, when we first did receive a report, it was largely red, but I can say now, Chair, there's a lot of greens, you know, meaning that policies have been updated. And where they have not been updated, I think it's very, you know, minimal. It's subject to, especially in supply chain, where they are saying, let's wait for this study to be concluded, and then we will know exactly how our policy should look like. But in the main, Chair, there's a huge progress there. IT management findings, Chair, this relates to where we were. It was said, I mean, there was a repeat finding where we're still not addressing some of these prior year audit findings. Job descriptions for cybersecurity department were not developed and reviewed with HR. Recruitment process to capacitate cybersecurity was still underway, Chair. Chair, we are 90% complete insofar as filling those positions. Cybersecurity policies have been drafted and in process for approval. The contract, Chair, which was the main issue around the disaster management recovery for procurement of UCS, was still outstanding. So what have we done there, Chair? We have actually placed that contract for UCS so as to be able to do disaster recovery management exercises. Oversight, Chair, and monitoring findings. Internal audit was not assessed to be adequately resourced relative to the size of the entity. Chair, what we allocated funding for additional resources for internal audit. I know, Chair, that the adverts are out to fill those positions. That's where we are, Chair. Moving on, Chair, to the next page, financial health findings. It was about the VSP program. Chair, I can confirm that we have finalized that process. There were about in excess of 100 employees that have left, but we can assure, because I know it was also again raised by the researchers to say, you know, are we not now depleting the skills? I can assure, Chair, one of the conditions was that, you know, where an individual was occupying a critical skill and we don't have a replacement, we did not release those employees. And how we ensured that there's robustness in the system, Chair, it was the entire executive committee that considered as those applications. And where there were concerns either from one department or the other discussed. So there was a whole open and transparent process to make sure that we can cover the blind spots, Chair. So that has been addressed and it went very smoothly, Chair. There are no issues. Fraud and risk indicators, Chair. This relates to the whistleblowing and the incident at the dockyard around, you will recall, Chair, there was also a Sunday Times article about this matter in the procurement environment. Six people were charged, and three people were not found, were found not guilty, and they returned to work. And those four were found guilty, Chair, were all dismissed. Chair, the last one, audit-related matters, it's regarding the, there were delays in receiving some of the information, and of course the excuse was COVID. However, Chair, there was a recommendation that we must appoint coordinators, you know, who will then coordinate the effort to for the AG to receive the required information. We appointed two senior managers, one in finance, who are actually fulfilling that role. So we have resolved that issue, Chair. Chair, in conclusion, we continue to find ways of how best we can service the client within these limited budget constraints. And I think our employees are mobilized towards ensuring that, you know, they prioritize the DoD as a client. But what has to improve, Chair, is how we communicate expectations beyond the SLA that we have. And how we are resolving that issue, Chair. We have established, you know, or we've agreed to have these monthly periodic meetings where the in the main acquisition and supply chain management are meeting all arms of services on a monthly basis. That, Chair, over the last, I would say, 5-6 years was lacking, and then we are resuscitating those engagements. I also have regular engagements with the Chief, with SecDef, and we hope, Chair, and in so doing, Chair, we have resolved a number of, you know, issues that were of frustration to them. But, you know, and notwithstanding that they were operational or were dealt with at a much lower levels, but we are saying, you know, where there are issues, Chair, we will deep dive and roll our sleeves and get our hands dirty and make sure that we remain flexible and relevant to the client. That will be my conclusion, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you very much, for the presentation. Colleagues, we can now engage with the presentation. It covers two areas, planning budget as well as the status of record review responses. Mr. Murray, are you first on? I don't see the hands. Mr. Murray?
Thank you very much. Just thank you very much for the presentation. Again, I think we've said it a couple of times, Arms Corps is actually a victim of what has happened in with the defense budget and the acquisitions, the lack of acquisitions. So I feel for them. And I've got a huge, huge amount of sympathy for them. Just with regards to the dockyard that was referred to, that and I got the impression that they have allocated funds for upgrading of equipment and whatever they need there to expand business and to generate revenue. Can Arms Corps just indicate to me whether any work will be done on those three frigates to at least start with the upgrades, and to what extent will that be done, and how long is there a bit of a time frame in that regard? And then secondly, I want to ask, with the findings of the Auditor General with regards to Ops Tusano and the indication that that contract will run out, will Arms Corps be in a position to basically take over the responsibility to find, service providers, for instance, Danel Vehicle Systems, to do the maintenance and even the cannibalization that is required? Will that be possible? And is Arms Corps busy in a process to see whether they can salvage to Hoefijzer with Danel? And what is happening in that regard? And then lastly, have you considered, given the budget constraints, which is none of your doings, have you considered and made recommendations
to the Department of Defense and the Minister on how we can reprioritize the current MTEF budget to comply with our constitutional obligations. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any other hand?
Chair, can you recognize me?
Yes, Dr. Pasopi. Over to you, sir.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Chairperson and the Chairperson. In appreciating the presentation, Chair, there isn't much for me. The only area that I'm interested in is around the audited related issues. Firstly, the area that I'm interested in, Chair, is the audit opinion in the year under review. What was the outcome? And also, my observation is that the institution or the entity is in a drive to address the issues that were raised by AG's office. Now, as we all aware that an audit is a process. It's not just a once-off kind of arrangement. And my understanding, even before they come up with their opinion in terms of the finances of the institution, there is an interaction in the form of management letter where these issues are being addressed. Now, here, the entity is reflecting that it's in a process to address some of the issues that were raised, which is not a problem. But a question that I have, why these issues were not addressed in that process, even before the opinion is being finalized? What were the challenges? Because at the end of the day, they must take us into confidence that indeed they do have capacity to address this. That's the only area I'm interested in as far as this. But the last point, Chair, what's coming up clearly, I don't know whether is there any plan within the entity to partner with the private sector in as far as their programs are concerned, and perhaps with the municipalities as well. Because in terms of their day-to-day operations, that is taking place at a municipal level. And then, therefore, in my view, in the interest of DDM, the institution is supposed to have a plan to partner with Omasipala. And for that matter, Chair, in terms of the legislation, whatever program is being implemented in that space, it's supposed to find its expression in the IDP of a particular municipality. So that at the end of the day, whatever Omasipala is doing, there is a form of a contribution on one way or another. Those are the issues that I wanted to raise. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Doc. Any other? All right. It doesn't look like there's any further comment or question. Advocate, CEO, Group CEO, over to you, sir.
Thanks, Chair. I'll first deal with Mr. Murray's questions. Insofar as the frigates, is there any work taking place at the moment? There isn't much happening insofar as the frigates, Chair, simply because of the funding challenges. I know there's work that is taking place insofar as the Kraken spec and the submarines are concerned. But again, even that, the limitations is around the availability of funds. Can AMSCO take, or is it ready to take over Tusano? I don't think so, Chair. And I see Mr.
Tefu shaking his head as well. Not at this stage, Chair. And we have not been approached to explore alternatives. But again, I mean, all the straight answer is no, Chair. On the issue of who faced there, I'll ask Mr. Tefu to deal with that question. But around priorities or reprioritization, Chair, we do have these discussions, Chair, and at some point there was a plan to have a session where we look at budget reprioritization of what is critical. I know there was a consensus that we do need to have that conversation. And I think those sentiments, the sector do share, but it's a question of saying how and when, Chair. I know, though, that internally at the DOD, they do actually, you know, are busy looking at those issues. But we have not formally dispensed a letter to that effect. But I assume, Chair, at the right time, we will be, you know, engaged to look into those issues. Mr. Chair.
Good afternoon, Chair, members of the committee. On the issue of whether Hufeitar can be salvaged, you'd recall that members of the committee that in the last visit that we had at Dinel Land Systems, we were requested to engage with Dinel to determine whether Project Hufeitar can be salvaged. And we were requested to report in the next 3 months as to the outcome thereof. Notwithstanding, Chair, I wish to just caution the committee that, as you would have seen when we visited Dinel Land Systems, you know, Dinel doesn't have the capacity and the capability anymore to further execute this particular project. But the other challenge would be funding. We don't have sufficient funding, you know, within the SCAM itself to ensure that this particular project is completed. So even though Dinel is of the view that this project should be executed going forward, but with regards to the issue that the CEO has raised, the issue of funding. Without funding, there is no way that we can see this project being executed within time and on the basis of the budget that was contracted. But also, Dinel was made it clear to us that if they were to execute this particular project, they will have to reset or rather renegotiate the terms and conditions of this particular contract. Thank you, Chair.
Chair, if I may proceed and respond to Dr. Pasopi's questions. On the question on the regarding the AG's findings, I'll ask the CFO to deal with that. And with regards to partnerships, identifying strategic partners within government, I will ask Ms. Nongonyana to respond to that because there is an effort to come up with a marketing strategy and a plan which will then serve in the committees of the board. Once adopted, we will then execute. But also, Dr. Mkaza can also touch on the same issue as it affects these facilities. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. If I can respond to the questions of Dr. Pasopo. Just in terms of the audit opinion, that's for the audit that was completed for the year 2021, last year, March. We're only starting with the audit for this financial year now. In terms of that audit, we received an unqualified audit opinion with findings. And the findings are related to some misstatements in the financial statements that was submitted to the AG at the end of May. As you remember, the way we are being evaluated, you have to give the AG a set of financial statements at the end of May, which they will audit. And any corrections then will be done thereafter, but their finding will still remain. So even though the misstatements were corrected before the opinion was given, the AG's opinion then remains to say it's unqualified because you corrected the misstatements, but with findings. So that was the opinion that we got. In terms of the findings itself that were raised in the management letter, that we are on an ongoing basis correcting, and I mean internal auditors also monitoring that to see and reporting that to the Audit Risk Committee on a quarterly basis to see how we proceed with the execution or implementation and all of those corrections in terms of that. So that are being actioned in terms of the management letter that the AG did give us at that stage. Thank you, Chief.
Thank you, Chair. This is Liz Wengonyana. I'm responding on the issue of stakeholder engagement. As an organization, we are constantly trying to create and maintain relationships with key stakeholders. And as part of that, AMCO will be embarking on a number of roadshows to resuscitate relationships where formally there, including creating new ones. And in that line, there are a number of stakeholders that we've identified that we will be going on roadshows for. The portfolio committee and some of those parliamentary committees will be one stakeholders. The second one is around the diplomatic corps that we'll also be doing roadshows on. We will also be doing roadshows to the security cluster. All of the stakeholders identified are in line with the organization's drive to for commercialization. So we need to ensure that key stakeholders understand who AMSCO is, what AMSCO does, and what kind of additional services and products that the organization has, and make sure that people are aware and take up all of those. So these particular roadshows would be communicated once they are finalized, as the CEO has indicated. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair, and the committee members. This is Dr. Mkhara. From the R&D perspective in particular, we do have collaborations, for example, with the Department of Trade and Industry and Competition, Chair. We do some work with them around chemical and biological warfare. We also, Chair, are busy at the moment with engagements with SANRAL. This is regarding the Gerotech facility and its capabilities. We also have MOUs with the Department of Transport, and incidentally, from the last visit by the portfolio committee, I was directly conducted again by the MEC for Transport for further engagement, so we can see what more we can do as the two government entities. These are ongoing collaborations, Chair, and they are based on the capabilities we have within R&D and how we can go out and be able to service, you know, the different state departments or government entities. So as my colleague spoke just before me, the intention with the strategic and marketing strategy and some of the efforts that are being put is to extend that to even more other entities as well. Maybe I should leave it there, Chair. Thank you very much.
Yes, Chair. But, Chair, you know, Portfolio Committee being one of our stakeholders, and of course, Chair, if there are any leads that the members have, by all means, Chair, we will gladly would like to know about some of those opportunities that they think we should, you know, pursue. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much, CEO. Colleagues, I think we all the questions were addressed, and we sympathize with the situation the entity finds itself in, which is budget cuts, and that they also have to try and work within what is allocated to them. That's a situation all departments and entities find themselves in, that we really have to contend with, but try to do more with less. I think you are doing that, and you are also looking at other revenue generating streams. We appreciate that. And colleagues, I think we will then discuss the budget, the two presentations at our time. I think for now it suffices to thank the board and the CEO for their presentation. And obviously would indicate our attitude as a committee to the report, and which will then be in our report to Parliament. With that, is there anything, colleagues? I don't think we'll deal with the minutes. We have gone over time. Brian, I'm sorry. We'll deal with the minutes at our next meeting. Colleagues, what remains for me now is to thank all of you and then attend the meeting. Is there any objection to that? No objection to it. Colleagues, thank you so much. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you.
Recording stopped.